Call the meeting to order. Good morning and welcome to the July 5th, 2022 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. I'd like to thank everyone for participating. Oh, we're missing Ann.
She's out in the hallway.
We're going to wait just a minute here for our other commissioner. It's okay. I was just... Okay, I'm going to bring us back to order. I'd like to thank everyone for participating today and remind you to silence any electronic devices that you may have with you today. For those attending electronically, would you please mute your screens? Today's meeting is a study and business session with the study session starting this morning at 10 a.m. and the afternoon business session starting at 1 p.m. We welcome the public's input at our meeting and remind you that these meetings are recorded. Members of the public are encouraged to ask specific questions after each item presented. If you wish to provide additional comment or ask questions related to matters not on the agenda, time will be provided in the afternoon. If you wish to address any item on the agenda, please raise your hand, either physically or electronically, that you wish to speak. When recognized, please state your name and address for the record, and make sure you get my attention. If you're trying to speak, make sure you keep waving until someone catches my attention. So please state your name and address for the record and limit your comments to 3 minutes. Today we have three commissioners present. Ann and I are here in the boardroom, and Dennis is here electronically, and we have two commissioners that have been excused today.
Steve, may I jump in?
Yes.
Am I on? It's been so long since I've been here. I'm on. I just want to say I'm so happy to be here. Yeah. This is my first in-person meeting in over 2.5 years. I might cry. Don't worry if I cry. It's just so nice to see everybody, although there's so many faces I don't recognize. Yeah. So it would be really nice to have employees introduce themselves somewhere along the line.
Certainly.
There's just so many faces I don't recognize.
Yeah, we have
thank you.
Packed house today. You're welcome. So, would you please join us with Zach Jones in leading the Pledge of Allegiance and a safety minute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So, Ann, what we'll do is we'll go through our agenda this morning. We have lots of visitors that would like to speak, and then if we have time before lunch, we'll go through introductions.
That'd be wonderful.
Great.
We have
good
extra chairs.
Good idea.
Do we? Can't use those?
Okay, Zach, continue.
All right. Good morning. My name is Zach Zorns, and I'm an engineer with the transmission department here at the PUD. Today we're going to go over an HPI minute for some principles in switchyard design. And the topic today is we're faced with a change for our new interconnection at Malaga. The customer is requesting a different type of switchyard than what we usually build. It's a type that has more reliability, but it's a higher cost. And so this change in design is going to impact the parties that use these facilities, the wiremen, technicians, engineers. And so HPI discussions really started on day one of this new design. A typical switchyard panel reflects kind of the yard's arrangement. So you have a single breaker protecting a line, and the blue boxes you can see on the screen, those are a redundant pair of relays to protect the line, and then some control switches to operate the single breaker that goes with the line. This new design that the customer is requesting, it doesn't have just a single breaker protecting the line, but now we've got three breakers protecting two lines. So they call this type of arrangement a breaker and a half, because 3 divided by 2 is 1.5. So that engineering speak right there.
We can do that math, right? That
much. No, don't presume.
So, again, the benefits of this yard is it's easier to maintain. You have better restoration. The drawbacks, it's more costly and it's more complex. And so from an HPI standpoint, there's a risk of the crews operating this and engineers. There's just a lot more complexity to the yard that has to be understood when you're working in it. So our challenge was, how do we make this yard that's a new design feel similar to our current design, and keep it within a reasonable size, because you can't double the size of everything. So that was a challenge before our group. And so we kind of
worked. Zach, may I interrupt you just a minute, please?
Yes.
On your last slide, the last bullet point, you used the phrase house size. Can you define that for me?
Sure. A control house is where we keep all of the protective relay panels and the controls. So when crews go out to the yard, this is where all the equipment that's kind of the brains of the yard is housed in a control house building.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks for the question. So the process we kind of went through on HPI was, first of all, we made the recognition the usual process won't work here. We scoped out, what do we need to fit into our control house, and what do we need to account for in our design. We brained our HPI options. We reached out to some external utilities. We reached out to Snohomish PUD. They had a recent new construction of this type. We reached out to Umatilla, and they actually were kind enough to give us an on-site tour of some of their new facilities of this type. And so we got some external input. We discussed our design options internally with the engineering team at Chelan, and we developed some different options that were good quality. And then we took those options out to the crews and said, what do you think about these options? Which ones make sense to you? So we didn't just kind of keep it in the engineering house of things. We solicited some input, and I think we got a better proposal out of the deal. And also just recognizing that the HPI for the crews is different than HPI needs for the engineers. So bringing that into the development conversation. So this is the approach we ended up choosing for our design. The relays, now we still have redundant relays for each line, and we're giving each redundant relay set its own panel. So crews are very clear when they're working on one panel, there's nothing else but the relays for that particular line in that panel. So it's very clear what's being worked on. And then the control switches, because it used to be one breaker, one control switch. Now that we have three, we have the control switches laid out as the yard is kind of laid out, so it's very intuitive for the crews to do switching now. So those were some of the HPI takeaways from this development process. Any questions?
Josh, did you mention HPI,
again,
the term,
Zach,
what that means?
We've been through the acronym HPI around quite a bit. for our audience that is attending and our audience that is listening, could you please define HPI for us all, please?
Sure. HPI is Human Performance Initiative, and so it's trying to design controls in support of the way people think and have safeguards for when you want to guide and direct certain behaviors away from certain outcomes. So it's really strongly thinking about the process of how you do your work and making it sure that engineers and the crews are able to execute it in a safe manner. So it's very similar to safety, but it's kind of putting an extra guard post on either side of the safety process.
Very good.
Thank you so much.
Yep. All right. Any other questions?
Great. Thank you, Zach.
All right. Yep. Thank you.
Thank you, Zach.
Yep. Okay, commissioners, the single resolution 9 is not recommended by staff for moving to the consent agenda. Additionally, for the public's information, items on the consent agenda are subject to transfer to the regular agenda upon any request of any commissioner. Do I hear any such request or additions to the agenda? Hearing none, the agenda stands. All right. Kirk, I'm going to go ahead and turn this over to you and Dan Frazier.
Okay. Item 3 on our agenda is the 5th Street redevelopment plan, and no decisions are requested today. And with us presenting is Dan Frazier, and we have a lot of guests also that may be commenting as well.
Thank you, Kirk. Good morning, commissioners. Dan Frazier, I'm the Director of Shared Services. And I have a funny microphone here. Let's see if we can do that. Okay, thank you. So today is the third visit of 4 planned visits with the commission regarding the 5th Street redevelopment process and the RFP process. Today, I'm going to, as Kirk mentioned, let's go page down. Today is information only. No board action is requested. We'll be starting off by recapping the activities since June of last, well, I guess 2 weeks ago. We're going to summarize the feedback. We'll have an open opportunity for public comment and then do an overview of the remaining timeline. Before I get started, I did want to recognize a couple people here that have been in the process, involved with the process from the start. So back in 2018, we started talking about doing this redevelopment program, and we decided we really needed partners in this because it's not in our wheelhouse to redevelop property. So we reached out to the port and the city and started this process with an interlocal. I think it was actually executed in maybe even 2017 that we executed our first interlocal with the port and the city. And so here today, Stacey DeMester is here from representing the Port Authority now, and Laura Gloria from the City of Wenatchee is here. And then the other two main partners were kind of a stakeholder slash partner in this process, and that's the Downtown Association. Linda Hagelin is here, and Steve Wilkinson from the Chamber is here. And that group, there he is, and that group is part of what we've called the evaluation team. So this recommendation came from the work of that team. Included in that group is also Jim Coons from the Port Authority and David Lodge from our group internally here. So this has been a tremendous process trying to figure out what to do with a rare opportunity of 7.5 acres in your downtown core. And so we definitely wanted a team to be part of this, and I'm just up here representing the team and what our recommendation is at this point in time. So, okay, so what did we do since we were last visiting? On June 22nd, we had a customer advisory group meeting. This group met several times in 2018 to discuss what the opportunities were for this site. We engaged the Collins Warman Consulting Group, an architectural consulting group that helped facilitate those meetings back in 2018 and developed the report that became the basis for this RFP. We thought when we're looking to get feedback on what the proposals were and how they met the intent of that report, we thought, let's get this group back together because they were really well-informed, kind of like we've done with our strategic plans where we have a group of well-informed folks understand what we do. They can take a look at these proposals and really understand the impacts and how this met the initial the initial direction of this redevelopment project. So we reviewed the top two proposals, and then they provided comments, concerns, developed questions that we can go back to the developers with the with how to get through this next step, which is we need to know more. We need to know more to make a final decision, and how would we do that? So that's what that group provided some great feedback. So there was some feedback that was general to the process and to both proposals, and there was some feedback relative to the individual items that were contained in the proposal. So we'll go through those. Other input, we received 9 emailed public comments. Those varied predominantly in support of Music Theater of Wenatchee. There was a comment that on the YMCA that the commenter thought it was really great that we had the Y included in both proposals. We had one comment that was just supportive of the process, and they thought we were doing a really good job in terms of the top two recommended developers were really, from their view of the four proposals, were the best. And we had one comment that was just, let's just wait because the economy is kind of unknown of what's happening at this point in time, so maybe it's a good thing to wait. So those were the 9 public comments we received. We also received a letter of interest from the Music Theater of Wenatchee, and that letter of interest is to purchase the parking lot and the Fish and Wildlife Building in front of that. And the Music Theater has representatives here from their board who will probably speak to that during the public comment period. So we'll jump right into the feedback. So the feedback that we received was common to both proposals. Really positive feedback from everybody about the inclusion of the YMCA. They thought that was a great anchor for the site. I think the YMCA has been out in the community talking about what opportunities they have, and this was one of their selected sites that they would like to relocate through to. And so I think there's a lot of support there. One of the things that we showed in the Collins Warman report on the redevelopment was some kind of improved circulation. If you come into this site, we know that getting out on Fifth Street, getting in and out on Fifth Street can be problematic during certain times. Wenatchee Avenue itself is not the best, at the top of the ramp is not the best place to get out unless you really want to jump on it when you have a little gap. Circulation, both proponents proposed circulation through the site and back into Columbia Street. And so that was something that was a positive scene from improving site circulation. Good incorporation of the community vision document. Both of these proposals really took to heart the recommendations of the committee, the recommendations realizing this is a great opportunity, and you don't get this opportunity very often to remake a large portion of your downtown. So it really met the big picture, what we were trying to do in interfacing with downtown. Of course, this was a short process. The developers only had a few weeks to respond, so we were looking at very high-level proposals. So there are some questions, things we need to vet out over the next couple months. And one was the lack of information of how the YMCA and the Music Theater fit into these proposals. How does the connection work? So one of the things that the downtown was very concerned about was, how does this should feel like an extension of downtown. The city's done work over the years, and it was called the Downtown Subarea Plan, and in that process they envisioned that the feel of downtown extends to Fifth Street. How are we going to do that? Also, this is the only grade-separated crossing to our parks downtown. How are we going to make that and be a real strong connection and take advantage of what's on the waterfront? The other thing is the massing. So it was contained in our plan to show, to maximize the site with large buildings. But once you see it on a set of plans, you think, wow, how does 7 stories fit in with the feel of the rest of downtown? And so just trying to help envision through renderings or other modeling how that will look and how will that fit in with the architecture. Both proposals envisions a high level of funding required for this to happen, public funding, excuse me. So there's infrastructure, there's traffic improvements, street improvements, there's water, power, all those different things. So we need to really dig down into what that will be and how that gets done. And then, of course, the one comment we had is, how do these recent economic events, interest rates and cost of construction, how do these affect these proposals? And are these somewhat proof against those potential happenings? And how do these change if things get worse or better. So So some of that flexibility. Looking at the GTS Vara Grambaba proposal, I got a clip of the rendering there, and it's a very intense proposal. And so they did reuse a couple of buildings. So we had points in the scoring matrix on sustainability, and reuse of buildings is a positive for that. They show reusing the headquarters building and reusing the tech shop and building over and around the tech shop. So we really appreciated that. They had a realistic phasing plan. If you look at a development of this nature, it doesn't happen in a year or two. It takes a number of years, and so they had an 8 to 10 year overall phasing plan. They had a one-way circulation, and from my days in transportation, I really like that. It really decreases the amount of pedestrian vehicular conflicts you could have on the site. It gives you a good flow through the site without prioritizing vehicle traffic through the site. So it was a nice use of that a one-way circulation.
Dan, can you kind of diagram that for us?
Sure.
Can you just
move
your
finger?
Pointer.
This green building here is proposed to be the YMCA building, and so it would come through kind of where our driveway is between our buildings at this mm-hmm. point. It would come straight through the middle of the site and then jog over. This is the ramp from Wenatchee Avenue. Then it would jog over and kind of in behind the Fish and Wildlife uh-huh. building and connect to the back of the Convention Center Coast Hotel area.
So that's the existing ramp.
Yes, this is the existing ramp. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And then the building, just trying to get oriented here.
So this would be a new building that would be over our parking lot, the existing main parking lot, and then this building is the Rent-A-Center building. It's not part of our development.
Okay.
The old Cascade Chevrolet building. Most people remember it. So the tech shop is this red-roofed section here with a building coming over the top, and overbuild over the top, and then additional building to the south.
So they actually proposed to keep the tech shop?
Absolutely.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Probably not just the way it is.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's a cool old building, very heavy timbered, brick. It's got a lot of character, and I think they were trying to pull on that. Actually, this group has done a couple of these. I've seen a few of their other projects where they used an existing facility, built over the top of it and built behind it. And so they had it was on Capitol Hill. They had the character of the old building, like, but the use of modern building.
No, I like that. Mm-hmm. As long as you can get that distinctive odor gone.
Yes, it was a storage for apples for a number of decades. So. So that's the one-way circulation that I think is really a good way to access the interior of the site without making it, pedestrian unfriendly.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a good mix of those non-motorized and motorized uses. Also, the developer had a connection to this region. The developer is doing a project in Chelan, and really has wanted to invest in the city for quite a while, and this is a great opportunity for them. And they
which project that. In Chelan? Do you know?
They're doing the Outlook.
Pardon me?
The Outlook? Is that? I mean, Lookout. Sorry.
Lookout.
Yep. So then as we got in, deeper into looking at the proposals, there's questions. And I don't want these to be thought of as concerns like we don't like. It's more like, well, how does this work? Or can you give us more information about these things? And so one of the questions was, is this too intense for this site? This is a very, very intense development. Can the site support it? And one of the ways they're doing that intensity is via underground parking. So underground parking is not very common in Wenatchee. So are we entering a new era of where underground parking becomes the norm? Then this may be the project that it really gets going on. But how does that work on this site? Lack of identified retail space. There is a need for, whether it's on Wenatchee Avenue or other areas, and there may be some in there. We just didn't see, the mix of a lot of retail. Question about condos. Would condos work? And I know Commissioner Arsenault asked about condos, and we did discuss that quite a bit. I think the group on last Wednesday, really would like the idea of owner-occupied facilities in downtown. But we did have somebody there from Cache Valley Bank who said those are difficult to fund right now. It kind of depends on what the market is. The market's going to drive whether there's condos or apartments. So that's one of the questions we had. This proposal also had over 300,000 square feet of office space, and that is probably 20 years of our current absorption. So is there a plan with that? Is there a large tenant envision for that site? Or is there some other way that they're seeing a need for that kind of office space? There is, at the very south end of the site, kind of off of this picture, a potential conflict with vehicles and pedestrians in a plaza area. And if you've spent time in some European cities, you see areas that are really meant for pedestrians that they allow cars to go through. Those can have some uncomfortable conflicts at times because not sure who gets the right of way, really. So is there a better way to structure that so we can minimize the vehicle-pedestrian conflicts? There's a cafe in the very back southeast corner that just seemed out of place for the development. That was just one comment we got. And then one of the concerns was, because there's so much focus on that area through the middle, does this make Wenatchee Avenue feel like the back door to the development? And is it going to be that continuation of downtown? They show angled parking, they show some streetscape, so it looks that way, but how are the uses going to be set up so that it doesn't feel like it's the back door of downtown? So the second proposal, Steinhauer Properties, again, this developer had great experience with similar types of projects, they had great qualifications. It seemed like an appropriate use of the site, the intensity. It was some big massing of some seven-story buildings, but they had good use of green space. A developer also has a connection to the region. One of the partners is lives in Chelan, or lives in Manson. They had a mix of surface and underbuilding parking, which is, we think, probably appropriate because to get the intensity of a seven-story building, you need some underground parking, but it also had surface parking, which is more typical for our area. There looks like some good improvements to the frontage, but then again, that actually became a question about how does Wenatchee Avenue feel? Does it feel like a back door to the site? This proposal is really a massing proposal. It shows you the size of the building. When we say massing, it's the really overall shape of the building, but it doesn't give us any architectural detail. So we'd like to see some more architectural detail to see how these buildings would look. Again, would a mix of apartments and condos work on the site? There's a reference to retail and restaurant space, and we're not sure which building that would be in and how that would that provide that frontage on Wenatchee Avenue we were talking about. Question about a 211-room upscale hotel in Wenatchee. So we don't really have any of that level of hotel facility, and is there a demand for that? Now, this is all obviously market-driven. They're doing their market research. I think they can answer that question based on their market analysis, but we really don't have that at this point, and is that a lot of inventory? And we want it to be viable. We want the options to be very viable. The other question about the seven stories is right at Wenatchee Avenue and Fifth Street coming into the site with seven stories. How's that going to look? Is it going to be a real abrupt change of when you're driving down Wenatchee Avenue, and how can that work with the architecture? And then again, the question about the amount of public investment. So how can we figure out how to make that public investment work? There's a lot of different mechanisms for public investment in projects like this, and we've actually talked with the city a little bit about different options, but we need to answer that question to make sure it's viable going forward.
So, Dan, may I jump in before you
move on?
So do we know if this developer has done any development in Chelan or Manson, or do they just have a home there?
I don't think they've done any development in that area. They didn't reference any projects done in that area.
Can you ask that question?
We can.
Or will you ask that question?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
So the connection to the local, we wanted to make sure that there was a understanding of Wenatchee, and that's what we were looking for when we were looking for to allocate points to understanding what the community is, what, you know, we're an agriculturally based community that's morphing over time, and how our downtown feels. And we really felt like both proposals were very responsive to what downtown is. And so
I like the green area, but I would miss the little park area on Fifth and on the corner of Fifth and Wenatchee Avenue. That little green park area is really nice.
Okay.
Dan, This is Dennis. You know, there's the expressed concern about a seven-story building. And kind of one of my thoughts related to that is, you know, land is becoming pretty scarce. And when you can't go out, you got to go up. And this proposal may be a precursor of the future of downtown Wenatchee and related areas. And again, that's just a passing thought.
That's a great point. I think that's why I had to preface it with, we showed big buildings in our report. So it was just seeing those for the first time in relation to downtown. It just is quite a bit different when we only have a couple buildings of that size in the whole downtown. And so I definitely appreciate that. I think we are on kind of the verge of a new era. And so I think we're going to be open to these new ideas. And also, both proposers are here today, and they'll maybe speak during the public comment period. And I think Commissioner Congdon, they can answer your question.
Well, and I also would draw attention to the Smith Building in Seattle. At one time, was the tallest building, and it's just completely dwarfed. And a price for progress.
That's true. Okay, well, I can get out of the way if we're ready for the commission to receive public comment.
Absolutely. Commissioners, any other questions before we move into public comment? Okay, let's go ahead. And at this point, if we have anybody that would like to speak to... Okay. I'd like to come up and please give us your name and your address.
Hi, my name is Mike McNaughty. I'm living at 736 Cascade Street in Wenatchee, and I want to thank you for this opportunity. I've been a member of Music Theater Wenatchee for almost 40 years. And
excuse me, Mike, I cannot hear you.
Mike, let's see if so your microphone is.
Yeah.
You have to be super close to it. You might. Yeah. You could also
sit.
Sit
here?
Yeah. And then you can speak right into the... Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I'm much more intimidating when I stand up. Yeah. Mike McNaughty, I live at 736 Cascade in Wenatchee, and I appreciate this opportunity to address you folks. As a member of Music Theater of Wenatchee for almost 40 years, I very much appreciate your cooperation with us and providing and allowing us to use the parking lot for the Riverside Playhouse. Don't underestimate our appreciation for that. That theater is very important to me personally, to many folks. I directed the first show there. I've directed three shows since. I have been honored to perform there many times. My children have both performed there, my son and my daughter. My granddaughter has performed there in the most recent short Shakespearean production and will so again in the next. Second probably to my family and my work. My connection with music theater might be the most important thing to me, though my wife would argue with that list of priorities at times. That theater is vital to this community. It is vital to the live performing arts in this community. Not only is it the home for music theater, they open those doors to any other theater group that has wanted to perform there. You mentioned that we want this to be Wenatchee-specific and bring into the concerns of this community. We need that parking. We're willing to bend over backwards with you folks or anyone else who is going to build there. We want you to continue to keep that as a primary consideration for whatever plans you make. That theater is vital to this community, vital to our live performance community and this, and you'll probably hear from many other people saying the same thing. So please, again, we appreciate very much your cooperation in the past. Please don't underestimate how much we appreciate that. And please make that a priority in your consideration for whatever happens with that property to allow us to continue to have parking in that area for the Riverside Playhouse. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Dori Foster. I'm the CEO of the Wenatchee Valley YMCA. I want to thank you again for allowing us the opportunity to explore what the Y would look like at the new or the current PUD site. Throughout the 111 years of the YMCA history, we have served in various ways and have changed to serve the community. Most recently, the Y is the largest licensed child care provider in our valley, serving 400 children daily in three school districts in partnership with three school districts in seven locations. We provide $400,000 annually to youth program subsidies and direct scholarships. No child is ever denied participation due to the inability to pay. We are committed to serving our entire community, including those with limited means, with the programs that impact lives from cradle to grave. We are debt-free, financially strong, and strong fiscal stewards. We all know that the current Y facility is highly deficient, and we can no longer serve. It can no longer serve its original purpose as a YMCA. The new facility at the PUD site would allow the Y to dramatically expand its impact in the community, and we anticipate that to be as upwards of 50%. The economic impacts of the new Y here are exponential. We currently serve 400 children. Like I said, we plan to expand that by 70 to 80 slots in early learning licensed child care facility here. We will create 40 to 50 more jobs, serving about 50% more employment than we currently do. Potentially serve 10,000 more households, and that's conservative. The downtown site helps to serve the entire community by providing us the largest impact and the highest density of the people that we currently serve, and expand that. A new Y will be a destination point, as we've heard from the community surveys that we've taken. And by relocating here, we can expand the downtown corridor to Fifth Street, as we heard earlier. There's great community enthusiasm for this new YMCA at this site. We have currently raised $5,272 million in the not-so-quiet phase of this campaign, with potential significant gifts and grants awaiting land acquisition. In a recent survey, 1,300 respondents reported back to us with 650 individual comments. 98% said they would strongly support a state-of-the-art aquatic center, 95% multi-gymnasiums, and 88% strongly support an indoor walking track. We are actively exploring a regional aquatic center with the city of Wenatchee to serve the greater community need, and we are already collaborating with other nonprofits to make a greater collective impact. As you can see, we've conducted our due diligence. I gave you reports, hopefully Dan gave you the reports earlier. I have something that I'll leave behind to complement that as well. The community is changing dramatically with hundreds of millions of dollars investment in this in the transformation of this valley. And it also would put pressure on social services and those in the community with limited needs. The YMCA is uniquely positioned to be in service to the community in those growing needs. Having the YMCA in this site perfectly fits with the PUD's commitment to enhancing the quality of life as expressed in the Exhibit R recommendations and the Public Power Benefit Program. Our fundraising goal of $22 million is obtainable. However, as fiduciaries, we must be prudent with our resources, and therefore, we are hoping that the chosen developer will donate the land for the site. The existing buildings will be demolished and the ground made shovel-ready. We appreciate all that the PUD is doing to fulfill the goal of the best for the most for the longest. We think we can help with you and fulfill that by being here. We are grateful for the ongoing support and encouragement as we present our case of support to the community. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you.
Dorian, before you leave, just a couple of comments. As commissioner, I want to thank the YMCA for your due diligence. The data points that you have created are very thought-provoking and very much appreciated. Secondly, out of my past, my first year in the community in 1971-72, I was the YMCA camp director. And the camps were failing, and the thought of selling Lake Wenatchee was imminent. And we were able to revive that program. But I remember during that year, in consultation with the board, one of the big concerns was we need a new facility. And you know, that was 50-plus years ago. So that need has obviously been there for a while and has not gone away. Also, I can appreciate your concern regarding that land donation. And that has always been one of the largest concerns of trying to keep the YMCA located in proximity to where it is now and be able to have a suitable piece of property and that not be the acquisition of that property, not be the deal breaker. So very important. Thank you for your presentation, your homework, your diligence, and your communication. It's been good. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Dennis.
So
I've got a few people that want to speak, but hang on just a second. Let's finish up with Dory. Did you want to say anything?
Yeah, I do. Dory, right? With a D.
Yes.
Thanks for coming. Mm-hmm. I am a huge supporter.
Thank you.
In this crazy upside down world we live in today, there are so many challenges for kids, and they desperately need what the YMCA has and will provide. So I'm a huge supporter. But my question is, you said you had two asks for the developers. One was to donate the land mm-hmm. for the new YMCA building, and the second one to demolish the current buildings.
Yeah, the existing buildings would, for our purposes, the existing buildings on the backside of the property would need to be taken away and shovel ready. So I know this is a part of negotiations. For us to be successful, this is what we're working towards.
At the new site?
Mm-hmm.
Not demolish
our current location? No.
No. No. That's what I need. Thank you. Thanks for coming.
So we're going to go over here. Thank you, Dory. We're going to go over here, and then I'll come back here.
Good morning, and thank you for the opportunity to share with this group. My name is Colleen Fry, address 25 Fernie Street here in Wenatchee, but I am here today representing Music Theater of Wenatchee. And as you can see, this certainly isn't the first hearing where there's been tremendous supporters here on behalf of Music Theater, and that's because the 5th Street campus is Riverside Playhouse's home. They are a major stakeholder in what happens here on this 5th Street campus, and are so enthusiastic about the opportunity for growth and development here, but also recognize that they need to be a part of the planning. And with appreciation to Dan Frazier, David Lodge, Daniel Apple, who have been engaging with Music Theater, Music Theater desires to continue that support. Music Theater has been a part of the cultural enrichment and the education and support of the performing arts in our community for over 61 years. We heard about the YMCA, which keeps our kids and our community active. Music Theater enriches their minds and their spirits. It is a part of the lifeblood of what happens here in our community. And their access to the parking area allows this to happen so people can participate with our local talent. They can attend the shows. They can watch their children in the free summer Shakespeare programs, the short shakes, as we all have known for many, many decades. And so as part of that coordination on the 5th Street campus, Music Theater has currently rights to the parking lot, and what it's continuing is to be a part of that process and that development. The historic use and the ongoing relationship between Music Theater and Chelan PUD is consistent with those parking rights, looking for that shared, non-exclusive use of the parking area and increased use by Music Theater during its performances. There has been, you know, no payment exchange between Music Theater and Chelan PUD for the shared parking use, although Chelan PUD is granted use of Riverside Playhouse to hold Chelan PUD meetings free of charge, based off of that mutual agreed scheduling. So there has been a wonderful, very symbiotic relationship for use of that shared parking space. And recognizing that the Port, Chelan PUD, the City, Downtown Association, other stakeholders are undertaking this 5th Street campus redevelopment, Music Theater has desired to and continues to seek out, as you're seeing again today with the abundance of supporters, this continued relationship with Chelan PUD related to that parking area. And that fostering alignment in the parking area seems to be the critical thing and why Music Theater is so invested in this process. Because again, Riverside Playhouse is its home. This is the home, this is the future that has been invested by Music Theater over all these years, and they desire and continue to still be here in the lifeblood of our community. And so as they will be here for many years to come, you know, their legacy is to have their own productions, the community talent, the rentals from other community members, the no-cost youth program. They present to every school and nonprofit theater group the opportunity to use their stagecrafts, props, costumes. You know, Music Theater really is a partner for all performing arts in our community. They also even have scholarship programs. They are doing so much here. Similar to the Y, making bodies active, Music Theater makes their minds and spirits for our cultural enrichment here. So, as you have seen, we've presented a handful of documents. I believe Dan got those to the commissioners in advance. And Music Theater also has presented not just a desire to be a part of coordination on the Fifth Street campus development, but also presented its own proposal for purchase of those lots 2 and 3, the parking area, as well as the Fish and Wildlife Building. Notwithstanding the fact that Music Theater already maintains rights to the parking area, they're willing to just further continue their commitment to being here on this Fifth Street campus. Under the proposal, Music Theater continues to seek that consistent approach for parking for what Music Theater already has. They're asking again for shared, non-exclusive use of the parking area and increased use during their performances. And so they want to maintain that as a critical component to this Fifth Street campus redevelopment.
Can I interrupt you just for a second?
Yes,
sorry.
Of course.
So time, we want to make sure I give everybody time to speak.
I just hit my 3 minutes, I apologize.
You're past your 3 minutes. But if you're speaking for many people, then we can give you a little bit more time.
I actually only had one more point.
Go ahead and make it.
That's possible, and that is just to reiterate Music Theater's commitment to the process and the development here. Working as allies together with Chelan PUD and the Port on this for Riverside Playhouse, for the continuation of Riverside Playhouse, its parking, and use by our community. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Before I just take hands going up, is there anybody else that would like to speak on behalf of the Music Theater? Come back to you. Are you?
First off, my name is Brian Higgins. I live at 2084 South Methouse Street here in Wenatchee. I'm a teacher in the school district and have been for over 10 years. And I really appreciate the opportunity to speak. And I might have lied a tiny bit. I do want to speak on behalf of Music Theater Wenatchee, but I wanted to make sure that my talking points are not 100%. It's not Music Theater Wenatchee above all. One of the things that I really appreciate from looking at your proposals so far is this interest in creating a space that feels very community-oriented. And I think that there's a lot of partnerships going on, the YMCA. I really appreciate the conversation about the seven-story building, because we're talking about what the impact is to Wenatchee across a variety of venues and layers. And one of the things that I think MTW brings just to this area right now is that we have increased access for people in the community. And as you move forward with this campus, and I love the word campus because it seems very inviting to people and bringing people in, is that you continue to make the community orientation of this area a focus of your project. I think that core values show in our practices and behaviors and the decisions we make. And I think that right now, just coming into this meeting and watching, it really feels like creating a space in the community and building community is a core value of what's going on right here. And to continue making that a focus means to continue partnering up and finding ways to leverage those groups to bring more people on site. I just remarked to my friend who I drove over with that I've been in the MTW parking lot, I don't know, maybe 150 times in the last 5 years, but is the first time since I moved to Wenatchee in 2007 that I've been in the PUD side of the parking lot. Which is unfortunate because, I mean, the building is beautiful, the people here are great, and I know that the PUD in our community is trying, it's really trying hard to reach out to community and show them what you bring to the community, and one of the ways you do that is by partnering and making sure that you're supporting those groups that also do that same kind of thing. So please continue to make this community connection, community focus, inviting people into our community a part of the project, and the more that you can stay oriented on that, I think the better the chance to be bringing hundreds of students into the area like I do currently to MTW for shows, or like MTW does with independent performances and organizations coming into their building as well. So thank you very much for the opportunity.
And I saw one more hand on the theater, and then we'll move into the white. Please state your name and address.
My name is Christy Kimmel. I'm at 1514 3rd Street in Wenatchee. I definitely was not planning to speak here at all, but just as I'm listening to the conversation, I'm wondering, it does seem that we're focusing a lot on the land space. But to me, it seems that the issue is really the parking. And the parking doesn't have to necessarily be the land right in front of MTW. I've heard you talking about underground parking, creative parking. So I guess I would just ask and suggest everyone to maybe think a little creatively about parking. When I attend Seattle Rep, I park across the street at the Mercer parking lot. I think we could probably even get more parking for MTW if we're creative about where we put it. So that's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Christy.
Thank you. Good.
All right.
Good point.
Rufus.
Thanks, Steve, and thanks for being allowed to speak. I'm Rufus Woods, 429 King Street. I'm also on the Board of Trustees at the Wenatchee YMCA. And I just wanted to thank you for the open process and the way that the community's been engaged in this process of figuring out what's best over the long term for this site. That's really important. I think you're really living up to your values. Your staff, Kirk, Dan, David, and company have been phenomenal to work with. We really appreciate. We've gotten lots of tough questions, and very appropriately so, and we've gotten lots of encouragement as well, and we appreciate that as well. If this was a private utility, none of us would be here. This decision would have been made. It would have been, what's the highest, best economic use? So we do truly appreciate the fact that we have a utility that's publicly owned, that cares about the community for the long term, that's living those values. It makes a huge difference, and it makes me proud to be part of this community. I'm also a big supporter of Music Theater of Wenatchee and supportive of the work they're doing, critical work. They're just great folks. They make such a difference here. We're all here trying to make the community a better place for the long term. So thank you for the open process. Thank you for the opportunity to consider the YMCA as part of that, and also Music Theater of Wenatchee. It really means a lot that you've taken such time and consideration and been so supportive and encouraging and open to listening. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Rufus. Okay. I see a hand back here.
I was hoping it was going to be noon, but it's not. It's 11 o'clock, so I'll say good morning. My name is Jay Woody Lotz. I live at 272 Hammond Lane, Rock Island, Washington. I am the new executive director of the Numerica Performing Arts Center. We've adopted in the last 10 months in my organization a phrase that we say, an old African proverb is, if you want to go fast, go alone, and if you want to go far, you go together. And I got a chance to meet Dory, and we got to my wife and I got a chance to live in downtown Wenatchee for the first 6 months that we were here. And we watched numerous children come out of the YMCA. And it's a great experience because a kid from a one-square-mile town on a Native American reservation, we didn't have that opportunity. We didn't have an organization that served my community like that, with children that desperately needed it. And so to hear these things and these new developments, it's a vision for the future. But these are nonprofit organizations. They are not self-serving. They are community-serving. I also, at the same time, got to partner with Music Theater of Wenatchee, and we put in two productions, we put 7,500 people through our building. That is what art does. It connects us. It lets us live. It lets our community come together. It's a cultural hub. That is what Riverside Playhouse is. It's very unique. It's very special. To have all of those things, I would just like to remind you, as a community-serving organization, to look to your mission and what it does for both of these organizations. It's powerful. So I'll remind you of the same thing that I tell my board and my staff and our multitude of volunteers that get tired of me saying it, but I believe it, and I would like you to keep it kind of in your hearts and your minds and your souls a little bit. I'm saying, if you want to go fast, go alone. But if you want to go far, go together. And for both of these organizations, it's incredibly important that we go together. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Okay. Do we have anybody else that would like to?
Thank you. Chance to visit with you. I'm Bart Clennon. I live at 29 Dana Street, a new address. The biggest thing I want to do is thank you for what you've been through. I was part of the committee that was, the stuff was summarized on just a little while ago, and it, just reading the initial stuff, the entities that you have involved in the decision process, you know, from the city, I opened it up right, you know, from the Chelan Douglas Port, City of Wenatchee, Wenatchee Downtown Association, Wenatchee Valley Chamber of Commerce. I mean, You've really demonstrated an outreach that's so important to what we're doing, and what I want to do is just thank you. I will say also that we've had a smaller group that I think you're going to hear a little more about from the city before long in a positive way. This is one part of a major change in our downtown area, and we need to make sure that we do it in a planned, directional approach, and therefore, as I say, we've met with the city a number of times. I think we've made great progress, and I think you'll hear some things about a broader committee. Not that it wouldn't take anything away from what you're doing, but it would allow it to fit in with the total development much better than maybe. Well, if we don't plan that, we won't get what we need. We've got to do that in a broad concept. So I'll put together. But biggest thing, thank you. This what an outreach and what a way you've gone about doing this. I'm just so impressed. Thank you.
Thank you, Bart. Your face.
Thank you. Linda Haglin. I'm the executive director of the Wenatchee Downtown Association. I reside at 824 12th Street in East Wenatchee. I, too, want to thank the PUD. I was somewhat vocal when this all started years ago that we wanted this, whatever happened on this place, not to have fences around it. And we have a big empty hole at the entrance to downtown. We've always seen this as an opportunity for good, but a collaboration as we move downtown forward. So when we've sat in many, many meetings, it's always been, what could this be? And how could this work with the other efforts going on? When Bart said downtown will change dramatically, it will. And one proposal is a 5-over-2 apartment. That's 7 floors on the other end of downtown in housing. So that is proposed. So that 7-story building, Dan, is coming, whether we're ready for it or not. So I think as we move forward, my biggest fear is that somebody asked me what would failure be, and I said, do nothing. So I want to thank the two companies that proposed this. It's huge. To take on a project of this size for a developer is huge. And so I just want to thank them for proposing and dreaming with us in Wenatchee. And I look forward to all working together for not just the good of downtown, but the good of the community I've lived in for 65 years. And I just want to, again, thank the PUD for letting us be at the table with the city and the port, because I think it's going to take all of us to get to the finish line of this one, not just one or another. And to be able to create a neighborhood extending all the way to Fifth Street and downtown is a huge dream that we have to do. So I think it's only good ahead, but moving together is the only way we're going to get it for the good of all the downtown. Thank Great. You.
Thank you, Linda.
Good morning. I am Steve Wilkinson. I'm the Executive Director of the Wenatchee Valley Chamber of Commerce. The Wenatchee Valley Chamber of Commerce represents over 600 businesses located here in Wenatchee and East Wenatchee. I'm going to go off my script a little bit because, as Linda said, on the buildings there, we're looking at a seven-story building in the proposal. That is not the future. That is the present. Right across the railroad tracks from here is the Riverfront Village. That is five buildings, five stories tall. The other development that Linda talked about, that's seven stories tall as well. So it is the present. I also will share, and I thank you also for, this is a piece of a puzzle that the community is talking about and is envisioning. There is a vision as we're moving new here, so I think we're moving south along here. And the port has some ideas here with lineage on that area in Columbus. And so this is just one piece of the puzzle for the community in the future. I've had a chance to talk to Dory, thank you very much, about the YMCA. And I've had, I'll say, the pleasure of living in Kansas for 5 years. And in the Midwest, those YMCAs are the jewel of the community. They're multi-generational. They are used for child care, which is so important today. They're used for young people to keep them active. It's used for families to gather. It's used for classes and educational purposes. So those buildings are used fully throughout the day. And so they are really a keystone to a community. And they can be a beautiful, beautiful jewel to the entry to a community. So I really thank the YMCA and the board for just their design and presentation. I have the pleasure of serving on the Chelan PUD 5th Street Redevelopment Evaluation Committee. And the evaluation process has been well organized and an informative process, allowing for much discussion from numerous stakeholder perspectives. And this is to the thanks of Dan Fraser, David Lodge, and Suzanne Hartman. The evaluation committee used an invaluable evaluation rubric to distinguish both the GTS Development LLC and Steinhauer Properties, Inc. proposals as the two most compelling opportunities to redevelop the Chelan PUD 5th Street property. That rubric, which was so important to us, was created by Stacy. Approximately 2 weeks ago, the 22nd, the evaluation committee members joined also with the Standing Community Advisory Group to discuss the proposals from GTS and Steinhauer Properties. This meeting was very beneficial and much discussion focused on the strengths of the properties, but also the need to attain greater clarity about the development phases and the want for more detailed design information, specifically on Wenatchee Avenue, because that's where people are coming into the community. So a little more detail is needed there. The meeting ended with many thanks to the Chelan PUD for your openness and your thoughtfulness and thoroughness, and most importantly, including the community in the decision-making process. And I sincerely thank you for your time and the devotion to your vision, providing the best value for the most people for the longest time. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve.
Good morning, Commissioners. Laura Gloria, I'm the Executive Services Director for the City of Wenatchee. I'm at 301 Yakima Street. That's my work address, but, you know, where I spent most of my time. This property, as you all have heard this morning, has a lot of interest, lots of questions, lots of different stakeholder groups that have lots of varying interests because it's a very important part of the community, especially as to our downtown and to our community in general. I think one of the things that I've learned off of being on the committee for the review of the proposals is that the top two proposers really want this place to be successful. Obviously, there's the feasibility and the financial component, but they want to create a sense of place. They have met with the community. If they had had more time, they actually wanted more time to be able to do that even further, to really do market studies. And so I think what you've seen in the proposals, while it was a really, really good shot at this is what we think we've heard, but it doesn't stop today and it doesn't stop until it's done. I think that both of the proposers really have the capacity and the want to do that and to work with the community in order to make it successful. So I really wanted to point that out, that it isn't just a development. It's going to be the gateway to our downtown, and we really want that to show in everything that's put into it. You know, as Bart mentioned earlier, this is a big interest for the city, not just this part or this property, but we've also got the Wenatchee Convention Center. There's thoughts of connecting it on the back end to Columbia Street to provide that circulation down to Columbia Street, which we hope to be a really vibrant warehouse district at some point. So the city also has a big interest in not only being requesting stuff and being at the table and having that opportunity to do so, but also being a partner and bringing resources to that. We're looking at a tax increment financing district. We're looking at other different things that we can do to help be a partner to the PUD and to this development. So with that, I just want to thank you again for the opportunity to be here and to be on the committee and to continue to be a partner. And I'm excited to continue to see how this process goes. So thanks again.
Great. Thank you very much. Can I say one sentence more? You can.
What a challenge, but what an opportunity. Yeah. That's what keeps my mind going on this. It can overwhelm you. But this is, we wouldn't have dreamed having this chance or opportunity 10 years ago or 15 years ago. So all the good things have happened to me. I can start to make more than one sentence.
All right.
That's a run-on sentence. That's okay.
All right. I'm Stacy Demester, and I'm with the Chelan Douglas Regional Port Authority. I live at 432 Erica Lane in Wenatchee. And like everyone else, I just want to thank you guys for giving me and the port an opportunity to be a part of this process. The CDRPA is fully supportive of the top two proposals. We partnered with you to put together an objective process to identify a developer who can maximize this redevelopment opportunity, which would provide benefit to our downtown, our community, and the surrounding region. Both of these developers have proven that they have the vision, experience, track record, and financial backing to do so. Early on, there are questions about, well, they're not local, how do they know us? But as Dan said, both of them have ties to our community, and they're looking to build on the aspects that have drawn them here and brought their interest here. It's important to remember, though, at this phase, both proposals are just concepts. The details will be worked out as we work through this process, and that takes time. And right now, we just need to focus on what is needed to make a decision on which developer the PUD wants to move forward with negotiations on. So just on behalf of the port, I just want to say that we would take no issue on moving forward with either of these developers, and we know that both of them could transform this PUD campus into something really spectacular. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Stacy. Any other public comment?
Good morning, Commission. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for everyone coming out and talking about this opportunity. My name is Rory Sandstrom. I live at 145 Monticello Lane in Manson. I represent Steinhauer Properties. I'm the Director of Development. Steinhauer Properties has been in the mixed-use complex urban infill development business for almost 30 years. One of the two partners who initially started what was American Life, now Steinhauer, Greg Steinhauer, he got his start as a single-family home builder. We are Bellevue-based. We are a regional developer, and by regional, I mean West Coast. Commissioner, to answer your question, we do not currently have anything under development in the area. However, I have been a resident of Eastern Washington for almost 20 years in Manson.
May I jump in?
Sure.
Rory, right?
Yes.
Are Are you proposing a multifamily? Are you the group that's proposing the development in Manson in the very early stages?
No.
Nothing really on the books yet?
We do not currently have anything under development on the east side of Washington. But we are Bellevue-based, and we have, if you look at our stabilized portfolio of assets, we actually humble beginnings in Seattle. We've been a part of the greater Washington community, certainly my entire life, but also Greg Steinhauer has been a resident of Mercer Island for a very long time. And he now currently lives, he has a residence out of state as well. But, you know, the point being is I think it's important, and this was actually part of our statement in our submission, is to recognize where Wenatchee has been and where it is going. And Wenatchee being an agricultural hub, more of a, we certainly view it as more of a regional draw, understanding how to pay homage to certainly those roots and what this campus is currently, but then also understand how do you make a vibrant community thrive in the future in what is certainly a changing time. You know, admittedly, agricultural activity in the area, while it is certainly a core component of this area, what does this community want to be in the future? And I think the answer is, if you look at what has made many communities successful, it is creating a critical mass, walkability, connecting downtown areas to be kind of to have that live, work, play experience, but then also getting that scale correct. And I think that reflects in our proposal, which we have done and we are doing not only in Washington State, but also another example would be down in Peoria, Arizona, where the Mariners play their spring baseball. We are developing a parking lot there, 17 acres, into a mixed-use office, hotel, multifamily, and retail development. But anyway, to tie it back to what this is, you know, we presented a vision, as has been highlighted. I think it's important to recognize that we did indicate we needed more time, but, you know, we sprinted to the deadline as requested. What is presented is just amassing, but the vision, I think, rings true, and it also, our conclusions tie out in a major part to, I think, the study that was provided as part of the RFP documents, which is to say, you do need what we call, you know, maker space. You do need to create walkability. You need to appeal to certain stakeholders in the community, because some, for example, both the YMCA and the musical theater have roots here. So trying to understand how to incorporate what has made this community successful, but then also really, really build out for the future, which you do need critical mass in our experience, which is why it would be hard to present a vision that is of lesser scale to realize that success that we believe this community can achieve, but what you need to turn what is a gem of Wenatchee, you don't often find 7.5-8 acres in a downtown urban core to develop.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the developers being here today and listening to. It's an opportunity for you to listen and learn and from our community. I appreciate being here today. Oh, sorry, Ann.
Yeah, I was going to say the same. I appreciate you coming. I appreciate you listening. I hope you'll continue to listen. My question, I did have a question for Dan, and he can answer it later. At what point can all of these groups, the YMCA, at what point can they then make comment on these two proposals? I don't really know what the timeline is. And you can answer that after I'm done. But, yeah, the reason I ask about possible developments in Manson is only because it's helpful to see what you've done before. Mm-hmm. And I know the community really well. I've lived there pretty much my whole life. Mm-hmm. And I know, you know, what developments were done and if our community was listened to, if we had input or if we did not. So, you know, that's the reason for my question, but thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Please continue to listen. And I love the green area. You said it, you know, that much acreage in the middle of an urban area is really, really special. So, yeah, so we're really watching carefully.
but I appreciate those comments. And one response to what you said about what we consider stakeholders is, you know, a complex
urban infill project such as this requires outreach and listening to multiple stakeholders. That includes the city, that includes folks like the YMCA and the musical theater, the port, the PUD. And we, in the short amount of time we had, we've made, I think, a good effort to reach out to as many stakeholders as we could in that time. I know certainly there are folks in the room that I have not spoken with yet that I look forward to engaging with, and we will engage with, because it takes a village to do something like this, certainly. So our doors are open in the proposal. I know that's a public document shared on the CDRPA website. You know, my contact information is there, so certainly whether it's today or going forward through this process, we and I are available to speak.
Great. Listen. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
I have another speaker.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. I'm Ted Schroth. GTS is my company. Ben Petter is my partner. He's the owner of Vivara Construction. And I think many of you in the room are familiar with Graham Baba Architects. Brett Baba is a good friend of mine. And so we figured we would propose as a developer, builder, architect team. And we truly consider it to be a three-way partnership. And Greg Steinhauer is actually a friend of mine. So if you pick those guys, I think you can't go wrong either way. So he's a good guy for sure. And I want to, well, three really quick points. One, I want to echo what Rory said at the end there. A project of this scope is about listening, and it's about partnerships. And on the listening part, we envision a fairly extensive public hearing charrette process with lots of meetings like this, with our architects present, to really get a feel for, rather than just build something that we've decided we think is cool, what does the community want? What does the community need? And who can we partner with, including the theater and the YMCA? We've met with Dory and Steve. We're going to meet again today. We've had discussions with Wenatchee Valley College, the mayor's office, Mayor Frank, and others have come and toured my projects with me on Capitol Hill. I've been doing urban infill and adaptive reuse of old buildings for over 20 years. And we're also doing the lookout at Lake Chelan. Ben's company is one of our builders out there. We've completed about 160 homes, and we have about 40 under construction right now. Some of you may have been toured the project. Dory toured it with Ben recently. And actually would invite any of you who want to come up and take a look to come take an ATV tour with our general manager. It's pretty fun to rip around in the ATVs. And come up to me after, and I'll connect you if you want to come see something we've done in Chelan County. So that's the first thing, listening and partnerships, and we're all about that. The second thing, experience, just really two main points under that. We've worked with the arts. We own the Oddfellows building on Capitol Hill. We've worked extensively, in particular, with Century Ballroom. You couldn't have a worse business during the global pandemic, social dancing. At the end of the day, we ended up basically giving her $600,000 of our money to help her survive. We just forgave it because we believe that the arts is critical to any community. I agree with everything I heard today. And on the YMCA piece of it, we've actually donated the 6 acres up at the lookout to the Chelan Recreation Center. We're doing it already, and we've partnered. We've built relationships over the last 11 years of the project. So we very much believe in the YMCA and the theater and other community stakeholders as part of this. And my third and final point, just to address in very brief the two concerns I heard about our proposal. The office versus residential was just sort of a dart on the board. 300,000 feet of office is a great dream. The reality may be more retail and more residential or lab space. It depends who we can attract. And then on the retail piece, I couldn't agree more that we don't want to make Wenatchee Valley a backdoor of the project. That's the front. We are all about retail, and that is the urban infill part of our project, which is most of it's probably 24 of the 25 projects I've done have involved retail. And we've met with the owners of U-Village Shopping Center, which many of you, I'm sure, have been to. Our Oddfellows building has street-level retail with blade signs our trace loss project on Capitol Hill, which we developed in connection with Liz Dunn, who did some of the buildings across the street. We created one of the first really cool retail blocks on Capitol Hill. We've toured the Pearl District in Portland, which many of you have been to, and they're all about retail modulation, awning, streetlights, flower baskets, banners for special events, basalt rocks embedded in the sidewalk. Just cool things that make you want to stop. Bike racks, places to leash up your dog while you buy a cup of coffee. All the things that make a pedestrian experience special, and I couldn't agree more that that's the vision that we have for North Wenatchee Avenue. Lincoln Square, to me, is one of the most successful real estate strips in the country. I'm sure many of you have been to Snowflake Lane with your families and enjoyed that. And that was reimagined after David Gillespie's vision for Lincoln Square failed, and Kemper bought it and did something incredibly special there. And he did that by pushing it up to the street and doing a lot of the things that we've done on our Capitol Hill projects. So just want to emphasize that we care a lot about the pedestrian experience in retail. I would venture to say we're specialists at it, and we care about it. Again, if any of you want to come up and look around the lookout, I'll give you our GM's phone number, and you can jump in an ATV and drive around and see what we've done. And if it's hot, you can jump in the lake after. We'll get you a pass.
Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you very much. Dan, you want to wrap this
may
up?
May I
commissioners?
Do you mind if I comment?
Go ahead.
Sorry, Dan. what was your first name again? I apologize.
Ted.
All right. So I have lived in Chelan, Manson area my whole life. I drive by the lookout every day. And I would encourage, he offered you to for people to come up and tour the lookout, and I would really encourage all of you to do that, the YMCA, all of the stakeholders to do that. I think you should take a look at what they've done. It's very controversial. There are people who love it, and there are people who don't like it at all for various reasons. You know, Chelan is a small community, and it's changing quickly. So, yeah, I would just encourage you, please do go look at Lookout. Take him up on his offer. Thanks for coming and sharing.
Dennis, do you have anything before I move on in the agenda to wrap things up?
Just a couple of thoughts. It seems to me the primary concern with music theater is the parking. And I guess I have a question. If you look at one of the two designs, the circulation of traffic pattern traverses through the middle of the development and on the south end connects up with Columbia Street. And there's already a well-developed city parking lot that would be accessible to music theater there. Again, just a thought, just in terms of design and maybe alleviating some concerns. And I'm not trying to minimize the music theater's passion and involvement and determination to preserve the asset that they have become in the community. So please don't interpret anything I'm saying as not supportive of music theater. And then I would like to ask Eric Walquist at some point to share with me his view of the assertion of the right of parking on the south end of our property. Those are my only two comments. I appreciate the developers being present today and speaking. All of you who spoke on behalf of Music Theater, thank you very much. To both the YMCA and the Music Theater, I don't see that there's a competition here necessarily for property or property access or rights. I like the expressed opinion of almost every speaker that this is a community development. One last thought. The PUD board has a responsibility to all of the ratepayers of Chelan County. And this particular project has a strong focal point because it's located in downtown Wenatchee. And I guess I'd just like to remind people that what is owned and located in downtown Wenatchee belongs to all of the people of Chelan County. And the commitment is to continue in that vein of representing all of the stakeholders, the owners of Chelan County, as we progress through this with the philosophy that what is the best need, best way to meet the needs of the entire county, utilizing the assets that are located at Fifth Street. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dennis. Dan?
Okay. Yes, I'd like to wrap up. I'd like to address Commissioner Congdon's question. And actually, I think this next slide gets us there.
I didn't look.
It's okay. I think this was touched on by several people commenting today about the rest of the process, because there is quite a bit of process to go. As both proponents talked about today, they gave a high-level proposal to us. And so we know we need to take that to the next level. We need the next level of detail. So what we've done there from June 20th through today, today's the board meeting to accept this comment and review the input we've received. So we'll be refining that recommendation over the next couple days, and we'd like to receive any input from the commission that they would like to see. And we'll be bringing a recommendation, and it would be based on the recommendation of going through a more in-depth process with these two developers. And so to answer the question about when does the music theater and why engage more formally, that's the process. Would be after, if the board does decide to move forward to shortlist these two, then they would have an opportunity. We see 7 to 8 weeks of that next level of development. And then we come back in September with a board recommendation for a final single developer selection. So we'd really have about 2 months here for additional development of the proposal and evaluation of the proposal and see how the stakeholders feel about that. So that would be coming back in September. And then the negotiation of the actual agreements would start. And we hope to be done with that by the end of the year. So it's a goal right now. I can't tell you whether it's a real ambitious one. I feel like it is. But that would be our goal, was we'd bring a purchase and sale agreement and a development agreement back at that point for approval by the board.
Okay. Thank you, Dan. Dan?
Question. So Dan, let's see, September. So you will bring your selection to the board in September for our approval or disapproval?
That's our target right now.
So how much input are we going to have into that final decision between the two?
All that you need. All that you need. We will bring a recommendation, just like this process. We've started this with a recommendation, and now we're receiving input. So if that needs to push, it needs to push. We're comfortable with that, to give the board time to review and provide input to that final selection.
And so we will have.
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm not trying to micromanage, but if we have to make the decision, we need to be involved along the way. Good.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I think that's why when we first sat down to talk about this process, just to get through this initial process, we wanted to make sure there was full engagement. And so this may involve another trip back to the advisory committee. It's really up to the board to decide what level of input you want to.
Thank you. That's awesome.
Yeah, I might just add, this is there'll be three meetings actually by the time you're asked to act on the recommendation for the shortlist. And so just as an illustration of making sure that we're really having a robust public outreach process and opportunity for board to hear all the comments and in advance of a decision.
And customers and anybody and everybody are welcome to come and
absolutely.
Yeah, we need to hear from everybody.
Very good, Dan. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Thanks to everybody for coming today. Really appreciate the input.
I would like to just say one thing. Linda, when you talked about, you know, the news coming up that we were moving off this campus, and it brought back memories.
Me too.
Yeah. And, you know, just how exciting it is to think of the opportunity that's here. And I just appreciated all the work that's gone into that. And as much as that was a shock at the time, that, you know, everybody's effort in the community to pull this off and make it something special, you know, it's going to be great. It's
going to be.
I want to thank Linda too, and some of the others for having an open mind, and you know, being willing to. I know it was difficult, it was tough, at the beginning. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you all for being here today. We're going to be moving into our Tumwater outreach.
Thank you.
Part of the agenda. See you.
Thank you.
Oh my gosh, I haven't seen the haircut. I hardly recognize you.
Yeah. A summer haircut.
Yeah.
For sure.
Okay.
Steve.
Oh. I can have them if you want. Sure, cool. I'll pass them out for you. No, I think it's great. That's what the wives did too.
Yeah, so I just logged.
Awesome. Well,
so
thanks, Colleen.
No, I thought you were well known.
Cover letter.
Yeah, given how you feel about it.
Oh, yeah. The proposal I tried.
Great. Thank you.
No, here she goes. Yeah.
Right. Good to see you.
So
it's
yep. Okay,
yeah.
You think?
All
right.
You're definitely more politically correct than I am. My winter jacket and my summer.
So they left enough for even the boards that aren't here. Would you mind terribly scanning and sending them? So that's the why here is music
here. Lane, welcome.
Okay, go ahead. I was deciding whether I was going to give you that one or give you the last one.
Kirk, I'll turn this over to you.
Okay, with us is Aline Underwood, and she's going to cover the summary of the outreach efforts we did for Tumwater Dam, and had lots of public participation, so excited to hear the results here.
Yes, good. I guess it is still morning, commissioners. So as Kirk mentioned, I'm Aline Underwood, manager of our Fish and Wildlife Programs. I want to take a few minutes just to talk about our online survey results that we conducted, but first remind folks kind of how we got here. Basically, how we ended up with the dam to begin with, to start this process. So, as you probably recall, the dam was constructed in the early 1900s by the railroad. Puget Power and Light leased the dam then until 57, at which point the district acquired the dam when it acquired Rock Island Dam. So, modern fish passage ladders were installed in 1989. Before then, it was a single lane passage on the other side of the dam. So you had modern fish passage since 89.
Lane, before you go too far, do you know why we bought it?
The way I understand it, it's a package deal. So we bought Rock Island and we got Tumwater and Dryden at the same time, and the Entiat Canal.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yes. So Puget Power and Light owned all of those, but because none of those were hydro generating anymore or power generating. We just acquired them when we acquired Rock Island.
Thank you.
It's like a buy one, get one.
Oh, now
get,
I know.
Get, okay. Buy one, get three.
One, get three. That's right. Yeah. So, and we do still use Tumwater today to meet our hatchery obligations. We have to collect there in our permits for our hatchery programs. So, at the direction of the board, So I'm just going to give a really brief outreach of our summary and our survey review. Just for information purposes, we're not asking for any action from the commission today. So at the direction of the board, staff conducted an outreach event. It was about 3 weeks. We opened a survey with 7 questions. We just looking to get some general feedback. The survey was open. It could be completed at any time, anonymously, and it was not designed to be statistically valid. We had an in-person drop-in session May 19th in Leavenworth. We had about 35 to 40 attendees. That particular meeting was promoted via print ads. We did social media, media coverage, web page, and we sent emails to our key stakeholders who had previously expressed interest in Tumwater. So we asked a total of 7 questions. The first one's pretty easy. How much do you know about Tumwater? I would say that something important to note is there were really 2 waves of feedback here. The first wave came right after that meeting on May 17th. We had about a little bit more than half of our respondents saying that they actually had moderate to strong knowledge of the dam. The second wave of input to our feedback or to our survey came after the Wenatchee World had a story on this project and this process in the paper. And I would say that those folks were less familiar with the day-to-day operations and had less knowledge overall on what happened at Tumwater Dam. The second one was just how often do you visit the area surrounding the dam? You know, for the several times a year, the number there is about 55 people. What activities do you enjoy? Predominantly hiking and kayaking. So we had about 53 people respond that hiking was their predominant thing they enjoyed. The kayakers was about 30. So question 4, we get into a little bit more meat. What aspects of Tumwater Dam do you value? We categorize these in themes. So the first theme with the highest number was that they saw no value in the dam. And candidly, it wasn't really expressed more than that. The second was the fish ladder, all the fish counting operations, the fisheries openings in Lake Wenatchee. Natural beauty and ambiance was 17. Quite a few folks mentioned Lake Yolanda, which is created by the impoundment of the dam. Some folks mentioned the nostalgia history, and then rounding out the end, supporting hatchery operations for multiple agencies. And we did get some folks from the agencies commenting on that as well. Questions 5 and 6, what concerns do you have? Again, we put those into top 5 themes. The first comment had to do with perceived negative impacts to fish. They talked about ESA-listed fish. A few respondents didn't realize there was fish passage, but quite a few folks commented on the ability of fish to pass the dam. The second one was concerns about impacts if the dam was removed. This was primarily related to the sediment behind the dam, potential impacts to the highway, and the property users above the dam. Third, they had no concerns, and they advocated to continue to maintain it and use it as is. The fourth theme was that the dam impedes the natural river flow. This was mostly to do with habitat, nutrients, overall river ecology. And the fifth top one was the cost of maintenance relative to the dam's value. And it should be noted that we've combined these comments because question 6 had to do with how much do you value this. And then individuals that expressed concerns mostly indicated a medium to high level of concern. So finally, the reporting respondent zip codes should be noted that over 80% of the respondents appeared to be from Chelan County. So that was our goal here, was to figure out what the residents of the Chelan County wanted. So that's Greater Wenatchee, Leavenworth, Peshawestin, Cashmere. And then obviously you can see kind of a smattering of Western Washington and, you know, Eastern Washington. So in the short term, what are we going to do? We are still planning for the time-sensitive apron maintenance that needs to occur. The timing of that has been updated. In the last time we presented, I think we indicated 2022 would be the intended construction date. Because of the fact that we're still attempting to acquire permits, and if we got the permits at this point, getting a project out to bid would be pretty difficult to do for fall work. We have punted to 2023 to 24 for construction. Again, that's still pending permit approval. And then for the long term, we want to continue our dialogue with our facility partners. So, you know, that's primarily DFW, Yakima Nation. They were also in attendance. I should have noted that. They provided boards and spoke to folks that were there at the Tumwater Open House. We're going to continue our dialogue with the resource agencies on the groups, so the folks that require us to also be there under permit obligation to collect our hatchery fish. We're going to continue talking to customer owners and develop a long-term vision for what, you know, the future of Tumwater Dam may look like. That may have some key milestones along the way with input from our resource partners and agencies about, you know, when we need to do maintenance, what programs are ongoing there. And that'll help inform our long-range plan for how we continue to move forward with the dam. And with that, I will open it up for questions.
Commissioners.
I don't have any. You do a great job. You're so thorough. But I do have a question. This question. Colleen, what is, you are the director of?
I manage our fish and wildlife programs.
Manager of fish and wildlife. You are terrific.
Thank you.
You do a really great job. Thank you.
Mr. Bowles, anything, any comments?
Yeah, a question, Eileen. Regarding the sentiment behind the dam, is there a timeline for probing that sentiment and trying to ascertain what might be in that that could complicate issues.
Were you asking, Commissioner, if there's a plan to test the sediment behind the dam? You kind of broke up a little bit there.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So the question would be what and when testing the sediment.
Okay, thanks. At this time, the PUD has no plans to test that sediment. The maintenance that we're going to conduct is in front of the dam only. It doesn't require us to get into the back of the dam. So at this time, that isn't something we are considering.
Okay. Now, I have about 6 months remaining, so my statement may not be relevant at all. But in terms of any input or decision-making related to this, understanding what is in that sediment would be a critical factor in my decision-making.
Yeah, I think we certainly understand that, and that's part of the reason we want to look at the long-range plan, is just to really understand all the different pieces of the puzzle here. I think one of the things we learned in the outreach, where there were so many different considerations here, and I hear your comment loud and clear, is if there is anything but keeping that dam, I think the consideration of the sediments is critical to that decision as to what happens. So certainly hear that loud and clear.
Yeah, thank you. And I guess what triggers that thinking is Okanagan PUD, and there's a struggle, related to the Enlo Dam and the sediment behind it, and the total ramifications of, one, how do you get rid of it? And in the process of getting rid of it, what do you do downstream? And that's an expensive process, and one that is...
Yep.
There's lots of issues.
And who owns it? Who owns it? Yeah. Who's responsible, too?
Yeah. And I'm just, curious in terms also at some point of how do you remove that and not, no pun intended, muddy the waters.
Yeah.
That was a good pun.
Good pun, Dennis.
That's a good pun, yeah. So if I'm breathing with gills downstream, I'd really like to know that.
Yeah. So, Elaine, I was in attendance, as you know, in that community meeting. And what a fascinating evening that was. You just had the whole spectrum of people that were pro keeping the dam, people that wanted it removed, But what struck me at the end in your presentation today is that in a strategic planning direction that you're proposing that we take, that it's a data-driven approach. It's really not taking an approach of who's yelling the loudest, who wants to protect it, who wants to remove it. But why do we have it? Why do we keep it? Why do we keep paying to maintain it? Do we not? And what's that going to cost? And how long is that going to take? We're going to get a picture of all of the data about this facility, this dam, and then let the data help direct decisions by this board and future boards years down the road on that dam. So I really appreciate that direction.
Yeah, and I think that in addition to that, we'll involve our partners that use the facility. It's not mm-hmm. just us. I mean, the right. Yakima Nation has a vital coho collection program. They're reintroducing coho into Wenatchee for the first time in a very long time. So really important to have their input. Yeah,
absolutely. And I think then with all that data, those of us who get questioned on removal or keeping have that data on what the direction that we're going, and we can make that long-range plan, whatever it is, maintaining or removing, and know that it's been well studied. So congratulations on all that work. And I just heard over and over and over from people at that meeting, thank you for hosting the meeting, asking for our opinion, bringing the community together, and discussing something that needs to be discussed. So congratulations.
Thank
All
you.
Right. We have 10 minutes, so I need some direction here. We're going to be talking about Confluence Parkway, but my inclination is to say let's do that after lunch and maybe get some manager items out of the way, Kirk, and spend the next 10 minutes, unless you have some other suggestions.
No, actually, I don't know that we have the right people on for manager items.
I have
Ryan and Brett are on.
I actually have one item, too, just to update the board.
Okay, let's go ahead and do that then.
Okay. You want to go first? Sure. Commissioners, just a note, just circling back on a housekeeping item and some scrivener's error. Last meeting, we approved closeout of contract 2113. The contract price in the resolution for that was stated about $9,324, not about exactly $9,324 above the final contract price. So we've gone ahead and since you approved more than the final payment, gone ahead and made that payment, but just want to circle back and let you know that the actual price paid is less than the price approved. So we'll just have that noted for the minutes. And
good note. Yep. I like it.
I like that.
Okay, John, you want to come up for an AMI update? And then we do have Brian Baker on. He'll be next with a parks update after John.
Good morning, Commissioners. John Sewell, Managing Director of Customer Utilities. It's been a while sitting in this seat.
Morning, John. Yeah.
Hey, I've given several updates, and you've heard it around the AMI, the Advanced Metering Infrastructure Project. Next week starts a big milestone where we actually will begin the beta phase, and that beta phase is the installation of about 600 of the meters. And it's really there to test our processes, how the system works, communicates. We've got relays in the field, access points, so that network's been installed, so now the meters will go out there and our goal is to do that over the next month or so and actually, again, start billing with them, learning some of the processes. There's a lot of effort going on just around change management because it will transform how we do business. So I just wanted to inform you that it's here. The contractor is Anixter. They're bringing in electricians that will be doing the actual installs. There's a whole outreach and communication plan around that, but again, it begins, and we anticipate learning quite a bit, and then the major rollout will begin this fall.
Yeah, so you mentioned outreach, John. So what do people do if they do not want a new smart meter, if they want to keep their old analog meter? How do they let us know?
There's an opt-out process. They can call. I think they can email. There's a, you know, we'll be on the information that goes out. And we have received a few already.
Mm-hmm. So they can call. They could just call the switchboard number.
We have a general number that's out there. And,
okay.
I can follow up with that and let you know. But yeah, that's part of the information that goes out, because we will actually send out an advance mailer. Hey, we'll be in your neighborhood installing these meters, and it has information around that.
Good, good. I don't think there are a lot of people, but the people who do want to opt out are pretty serious about doing so.
Right. Yeah. Recall, I believe it was right before COVID hit, we had the opt-out policy before the board approved,
right,
and all the parameters around that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. Thanks.
Okay.
Right. Thanks, John.
Thank you, John.
All right, next we have Brian Baker, who's going to provide an update on the amount of water we've had in the park in the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. Brian?
Hey, good morning, Kirk. You hear me okay?
Can hear you just fine. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, I was going to join in the boardroom, but I was scared that I'd be out of breath if I ran up three stairs or three flights of stairs and met with you guys. So I know you're all hungry, so I'll make it pretty brief here. So Ryan Baker, a parks manager here at the Chelan County PUD. Next slide, Rebecca, please. Here to talk to you guys a little bit about water conditions. And, of course, when I took these pictures last week, the water has since gone down and this trail is back open. But what you're looking at in front of you there is a picture of Kirby Billingsley Hydro Park. And that's from the main park looking up north. Anytime we see river flows roughly around 250 KCFS, we can see some impacts on our park. So we just wanted to share a couple of those shots and just share what we do, you know, in parks. And so mainly what we do is we get signage out there. We make folks aware that the trails have water over them. Believe it or not, you still see bikers go through this and people actually walk through it. We want to make sure that they are doing it safely. So next slide, please. This is a shot of Walla Walla Point Park. This is actually just east of Shelter 2. This is a very popular swimming spot for us. This is actually known as the sand dune area. There to the right is where you'll see that sand little spot out there where folks like to go out and swim. This is also a same shot of an area where we did an erosion control project. So that's mostly underwater, but just kind of gives you an idea of how close that water is coming to our trail. Next slide, please. Let's jump up into the Horan Natural Area. This is a shot of the main trail coming from the south looking north. Again, this was last week, roughly around 300 KCFS. We see water come over the trail there and mainly towards the middle part of the park. This is a blessing if you're a wood duck as far as filling the ponds back up, but not if you don't like mosquitoes. We've had a few inquiries today about the amount of mosquitoes that have come in with the pool rise there. Just a little heads up, if you do get those questions, we do treat those mosquitoes in the 5 acres of ponds that we have out there, but we have to wait for that water to recede with the product that we use so that it just doesn't flow back out through the culverts and into the Columbia. So look for us to be getting that out in the news here in the next day or two, and treatment probably within the next 10 days. So just a little heads up on that. Next slide, please. That is a wonderful shot of what we refer to as the spit or under the water there, or the peninsula. That's Walla Walla Point Park. Mm. That's the area where you normally would see the fireworks set off out there. But as you can see, last week we had some high water, so they went to Plan B. And for those of you that watched the wonderful show last night, that was adjacent to the Coyote, which is just east of this location here in the shot. So it's an interesting little piece of the park. We actually don't own this section. It's a question we get quite a bit. We actually have a lease that we have with the Department of Natural Resources, and that provides access out onto the spit to our ADA fishing platform, which is fantastic because fishing just opened up here on the 1st. So with that, that's kind of what I had for you today, just showing you impacts to the park, and would welcome any questions that the commission may have.
Commissioners, anything for Randy?
Ryan.
Great. Thanks for the update, Randy.
Ryan.
Or Ryan. Randy. Ryan.
That's all right. Starts with an R. You're ready for lunch.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you.
Okay. Well,
that's it for manager items.
All right. Sorry. So at this time, we'll recess for lunch and begin our business session at 1 p.m. Good afternoon and welcome to the July 5th, 2022 business session of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission meeting. I'd like to remind everyone to please silence any electronic devices that you have with you today and mute your screens. We welcome the public's input at our meetings and remind you that these meetings are recorded. If you wish to address any item on the agenda, please raise your hand either physically or electronically that you wish to speak. And when recognized, please state your name and address for the record and limit your comment to 3 minutes. And Kirk, remind me, we're going to go right into the consent agenda and
then resolution.
Resolution and then come back to 5.
Yep.
Okay. So, commissioners, we have a consent agenda in front of us. Is there a motion to accept the consent agenda?
Mr. Chairman, I will move to accept the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
All those in favor of the motion, the consent agenda, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Regular agenda. So, Kirk, would you like to go ahead and present Resolution 9?
I'd be happy to. Come on up, Gary. This is a resolution rejecting all bids and declaring that no bids were received for the supply of steel structures for North Shore Substation bid number 22-12074 and authorizing the supply of steel structures for North Shore Substation be obtained by negotiation. With us is Gary Rice.
Hello, thank you. I'm Gary Rice, the project manager on the North Shore Lake Chelan Substation. This is a resolution, as Kirk mentioned, to reject all bids and declare that no bids were received and requesting authorization to obtain steel structures by negotiation for the North Shore Substation. The scope of bid 22-12074 is to purchase steel structures for the North Shore Substation. Bid opening was June 15, 2022, and 3 bids were received. All bids exceeded the engineer's estimate by more than 15%, and other minor material exceptions were included in the different bids. In anticipation of higher prices, the district did increase their engineer's estimate by 11.4% per annum over the previous substation project that we did, which was the OMI substation project. The apparent low bidder of $251,525 was provided by Western Utility Telecom. They also were the bidder on that received the contract on the OMI substation steel structures. Their bid was 25.6% higher per annum than the OMI contract price. And to give a little perspective on that, we typically would raise the per annum rate by 3%. So we are raising them considerably higher, but the prices were still higher than we thought they would be. None of the bids were deemed to be responsive due to exceeding the engineer's estimate by more than 15%. Exceptions were taken in items delivered, contract terms and conditions, and warranty terms. Not all of them with the same bidders. The exceptions have been closely reviewed against the actual project requirements, and the team is confident that terms can be negotiated. Our lessons learned is that current bidding environment is very volatile and manifesting in much higher bid prices that are difficult to predict. The best course for future bids is to increase budget contingencies, continue to reach out to peers in the industry, and attract the most current prices for developing engineering estimates. Due to time constraints and project requirements, it is recommended that the steel structures be procured by negotiation. It is believed that terms can be negotiated at a price similar to the bid prices with a delivery schedule that will meet our project needs. Construction of the North Shore Chelan substation is planned for limited work in the fall of 2022, and that's due to an anticipated late arrival of the conditional use permit, and that would create a short fall work window. Major construction is planned for early spring 2023 and will continue through the summer and fall of 2023. Energization is planned for late 2023 to support long-term growth and enhance reliability in the Chelan and Manson areas.
Yeah, I would just add, along with what Gary presented, we are looking at each one of these to determine whether or not we have time to defer them. In this particular case, deferring this substation could cause reliability impacts to that area and to our customers. So this is one we thought we need to go forward with.
Commissioners, questions for Gary? All right. Thank you, Gary.
All right. Thank you.
Let's go ahead. Is there a motion to approve resolution number 9?
Mr. Chairman, I'll so move approval of resolution number 9.
Looks like Dennis was on mute there.
Dennis, you were on mute. Did you second that?
I think I read his lips, but yeah. I wasn't sure.
Kirk's actually, reading your lips.
First did it. But since I was on mute, I will second it. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis.
I'm 0 for 2 right now.
Any discussion on the resolution or on the motion? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Okay, at this time, we are going to... Thanks, Gary. We are going to go back to item number 5, talk about Confluence Parkway due diligence. And Michelle and team, thanks for your patience in flexibility of moving that to the afternoon.
Not a problem at all, commissioners. It was really nice to see that public turnout this morning and, mm-hmm. and offer them opportunity. So, no, we are fine with the flexibility here, and it worked out for us, too. So I want to make sure, Will, can you hear me, and you're on the line?
Yes, Michelle, I am.
Okay. So good afternoon, Commissioners. Michelle Smith, Director of Hydro and Environmental Compliance. With me on the phone is Will Packard. He's Environmental Planner and Noise Expert for Jacobs Engineering. We have hired Jacobs to help us with this noise study evaluation. And we've also been working with Jacobs to help us also look at other environmental impacts and mitigation as we continue to look through the studies conducted by the City of Wenatchee related to the Confluence Parkway project. Will is a traffic noise expert, and he's been able to go out to the site numerous times now. He was with a few of us that included commissioners back in May, and in June we had some more visits. He was also able to get out there and do some noise testing, to help validate the information that we got from the Michael Miner study earlier. Today we're bringing you the results of our noise study evaluation. There's no board action being requested today. However, we appreciate any comments or questions during or after the presentation. I'm going to move through this quickly, this background and introduction. I think it's important to really lead up to why we're doing this noise study and remind everyone of this because of its importance to the future decisions. So we've been coordinating for some time now with the City of Wenatchee to review the environmental studies associated with their Confluence Parkway project. They're currently in environmental assessment stage, and this is the right time for the PUD to be looking at all of these impacts and voicing our concerns and comments and asking the right questions. The project has potential to result in some noise impacts. So especially related to our state park and the Haran Natural Area, these lands are park lands that are part of our FERC license, And the city is asking for an exchange of property that will help accommodate the roadway. So in order for us to make those kinds of decisions, we need to know what kind of noise impacts as well as other environmental impacts are going to be things that we need to consider and make sure that the mitigation is sufficient if we approve of this land exchange in the future. So we will have to do a FERC amendment to our license to exchange those lands if we decide to go forward with that. And so knowing how this noise study and the noise impacts are going to influence decisions in the future is really important. So I, for one, am really excited that the PUD is doing this due diligence around noise. We've chosen to conduct this additional noise analysis to inform our future decisions. The due diligence supports our core value also for protecting public resources entrusted to us and making sure those decisions align with customer owner interests. In line with that, to go back to March 30th, we held an open house as well as some guided trail walks. We had a survey that was conducted over a two-week period, and we received almost 970, it's almost 1,000 comments. And quite a few of those comments were related to noise and wondering about the noise impacts and how that would be mitigated. So, again, I think there's been a lot of support for the work we're doing and the effort that we're doing here. And without further explanation by me, I'm going to turn it over to Will, and he will provide you the results of their review. So take it away,
yeah,
Will.
Thank you, Michelle. Yeah, thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. And through this noise review process, I've had the pleasure of meeting several PDUD staff and the commissioners. But for those I have not met, my name is Will Packard. I'm an environmental planner with Jacobs, and I'm a noise specialist. And my background includes working for the Nebraska Department of Transportation, also as a noise specialist and environmental generalist for about 12 years. And in the last 2 years, I've been working with Jacobs. So I'm looking forward to presenting and share Jacob's findings. Next slide. I'm also going to turn off my camera as I present. So Jacobs was tasked to complete a review of the noise study and kind of an overall review of the noise area, of the noise environment, and ensure that reasonable assumptions were made, reasonable mitigation measures were analyzed, and ensure compliance with federal regulations and Washington DOT transportation policy. So I think first and very important is that the noise study was approved by Washington DOT and the Federal Highway Administration, so it's been found to be in compliant with traffic noise studies. In summary, our findings showed that the overall data, the assumptions, the modeling, and results were reasonable, and appropriate mitigation option measures were considered as it relates to a compliant traffic noise study. In addition to just the traffic noise study, Jacobs also looked at elements that aren't necessarily well represented in a traffic noise study, including, you know, effects of the train noise and nighttime noise levels. Next slide. So one of the purposes of a noise study is to identify traffic noise impacts and look at the potential mitigation measures. So noise impacts are, you know, they're modeled. So you have your existing condition, your future condition, to determine the impacts you're looking at, either the change in the existing to the future or just that absolute noise level in the future conditions. And it's modeled at the peak noise hour or where typically there's the peak traffic volumes. And so our areas of focus are the Horan Natural Area, Confluence State Parkway, and Apple Capitol Trail. So then Washington DOT defines an impact as 66 decibels or greater, and then it also defines an impact as an increase of 10 decibels between what the existing condition is and what you're predicting in the future at that worst noise hour. So I think it's important to step back and when you're looking at impacts, to understand that this is a regulatory threshold. So a person can be more sensitive to noise and feel impacted at lower levels, and also a person can, you know, be more tolerant of higher noise levels depending on the environment that they're typically in, the conditions they grew up or their hearing. A number of a number of factors plays in that part. So there's the subjective element to noise and whether you're impacted. But when you're looking at a transportation noise study, when we're talking about impacts, we're referring to what these, you know, this 10 decibel increase or exceeding that 66 decibel threshold. And I think it's also important to understand what an increase in noise is perceived as when you're hearing that. So quickly, I'm just going to go through some decibel increases and how that's reflected. So a 1 to 2 decibel increase is typically not heard or not noticeable by a person. A 3 decibel increase is what they call barely perceptible. So that's when you just kind of notice that change. A 5 decibel increase is what they would refer to as readily noticeable. And then that 10 decibel increase is perceived as a doubling of the sound sound level. And so when we look at Horan Natural Area and Confluence Park, the noise study found that there was less than a 10 decibel increase at these locations, and none of the noise levels were 66 decibels or above at those locations. Next slide. The Apogee Capitol Loop Trail, on the other hand, did have impacts because it's very close to the proposed Confluence Parkway. So 6 receptors along that trail experienced a greater than 10 decibel increase. And there are 2 receptors at the pinch point, which is where the trail gets very close to the roadway for, you know, about 400 feet or less. And they experience a 21 to 23 decibel increase. So their starting decibel levels in the existing condition was modeled at 46 and 47 decibels. And with the roadway there, that increases to 67 and 70 decibels, respectively. There is a mitigation.
Yep. Well, may I ask a question, please?
Can Absolutely. You
and ask a question. On the 6 receptors that had a greater than 10 decibel increase, what was the size of that increase? How much greater?
So the 2 that were next to the pinch point were showing a 21 to 23 decibel increase. The others that were not at that pinch point, I think, ranged from 10 to 13 decibel increase.
Thank you so much.
So there is some mitigation measures that are proposed for the project, including a landscaping berm. And then at that pinch point where there's not enough room to construct a berm because you need to have proper slopes, they're proposing a wall, a barrier 4 feet high. So when you include that, the increase can be reduced to 16 to 18 decibels rather than that 21 to 23. And then you're now down at 62 and 65 decibels. So they're still at that pinch point. What you would hear is a substantial increase, that impact, but it does lower it below that 66 decibel threshold with that mitigation. I think a very important part to this is the train noise. And so when I was out there taking noise measurements, I took some along the trail at the campgrounds, deep into the Horan Natural Area. And when I was on the trail, I believe about every hour to an hour and a half, a train went by. And in that situation, when that engine rumbled by, my noise meter spiked to 82 decibels at that period of time. And then as that engine went by and just transferred to the, you know, the general cars, it lowered to about 70 to 75 decibels and held steady there while that train was going by. And that's, you know, anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes of a train passing by. And so that's a significant noise source that isn't always taken in consideration in a traffic noise study. Now, mind you, some of the existing measurements would have that in there when they were long-term measurements, but some of the short-term measurements on the path were measured around 45 decibels. And I was getting about 47 when I was out there for an hour with no train noise. But when a train went by, my measurements, my hourly average went up to 60 decibels. So I think that this train noise that's out there does have an influence right now on the noise in that area. And when it goes by, when you're on that path, it is definitely loud.
So Will, this is Steve McKenna. Was that information part of the original study?
So in the way that train noise would have been incorporated into the original study. Now, it didn't go into details about what these decibel levels were along the trail when a train went by. Mm-hmm. But what happens is when they were taking their 18 to 24 hour readings out there, they average that reading over that whole time.
And that
includes train noise. So you're getting some of the train noise in there certain hours and not others, and they're averaging that together. So the existing conditions, kind of in the campground area where they were doing those overnight measurements, did consider train noise when they were looking at what their existing decibel levels would be there. I think on the other hand, the trail, when I look at the data and I see that their measurements were short-term measurements roughly at 45 decibels, maybe 50, that to me is indicating that a train probably didn't go by during that noise reading. And so their existing levels along that trail appear to be very low when there's not a train. While when there's a train, that increases a little bit. So maybe another way of stating that is that this 21 to 23 decibel increase might be a little less dramatic if you're having a train going by in that hour.
Got it. And then the 4-foot wall and the pinch point reduces from 21 to 23. From 21 to 23, it can be reduce it down to 16 to 18.
Yeah, so we're talking about just that increase in noise. So with no wall and berm, you're getting a 21 to 23 decibel increase. But if you're modeling that berm and noise wall at that pinch point, it is now lowered. So it's a 16 to 18 decibel increase, which, according to the policy, would still be impacted as an increase. But you can see that it lowers it below that 66 threshold. So now there's 62 and 65 decibels.
Got it.
So in general, you're seeing about a 5 decibel reduction in the absolute noise level with that wall and berm in place.
Okay. I'm going to come back to more questions on the berm and the wall later on, but go ahead and finish. Thank you.
Okay. Yep. I think the last element I want to share is that the traffic noise studies, they look at that peak hour when they're determining impacts, but we know the campgrounds are overnight use, heavily overnight use. So Jacobs wanted to look into that a little bit more to see if there's some additional substantial increase or a major impact there at night. So we requested those 18 and 24 hour measurements and looked at the roughly 10 p.m. to 6 a.m. time frame. And what we found is that the noise measurements there were still in the mid 40s. So our concern would have been if at nighttime these levels got to in the 30 decibels. So, the mid 30 range, low 30 range, somewhere in there, that means that it's very serene at nighttime. That's very quiet. And if you add that traffic noise source, you're going to get greater increase in noise because you're starting at that lower level. So the perception is there's a greater increase. But when we look at the noise readings overnight holding at the mid-40s on average, that to me says that there is still potentially some train noise going on at night. You still have that, what I would call, for lack of a better term, an urban hum of noise that keeps that level up. And so when you add a new traffic noise source there, there's not as a dramatic increase as if this area was really serene in the 30 decibels. And so I think that that's a positive finding when we looked into that. Next slide.
So may I jump in?
Mm-hmm.
Steve? Okay, we have a question, Will.
I do. Will, this is Ann Congdon.
Hi.
Hi. I'm not real clear on what you were just explaining. So I'll go back to my question is, all of this noise is cumulative, correct? Or
It can be. If you have a quiet enough source and you have a new source, there's going to be less addition of that quieter source. It's not going to be as noticeable. So decibel math is a little bit strange in that we're on a logarithmic scale. So if you have two separate noise sources that have the same decibel level, you would get a 3 decibel increase. But the more you add of that same decibel level, the less that increase is noticeable. So it's not going to be, you're not going to add 60 and 60 and 60 and have now 66 decibels. It's hard to explain, but if two noise sources are more equal and they're not separated by much, there's like a 3 decibel increase to that addition.
I see.
So if you have the train noise mixed with the traffic noise, I think the difference is when that train's going by, there is going to be the dominant noise source at that period of time for 10 minutes. And as that goes away, the traffic then comes back to being that noise source. And then when you average that over an hour, yes, the trains do influence that hour average of noise. Does
okay.
that make sense?
It does. So what you're saying is when the train the train's there and the train's going to continue to go by, so we have to deal with that noise. We've been dealing with it.
Yeah.
But if you add the additional noise from tires and traffic on that road, it will be less than the 60 decibels of the train, so it likely won't be noticeable. It won't be an additional 5 or 10 decibels above the train noise.
No, so the train will be the dominant noise. Now, mind you, as the engines go by, it's going to completely drown out the traffic at that point when you're close to the path. And then as it goes to the cars and that lowers, or sorry, the train cars, I should say, it lowers to, you know, that 70 to 75. If you have a 70 decibel influence there from the traffic, maybe you're going to have a slightly higher 1 to 2 decibel increase as a result of the traffic and the train at the time that that's going by, but it's not going to be perceptible over, you know, that period of time. And then as that train passes, then it's back to the car noise source again. So you're not going to see these 5 to 10 decibel increases because you've added this train to the traffic noise.
All right. Yeah, that's helpful. That was my question. And I do have a question about category A for the Haran Natural Area. But I can come back to that after you finish. You may be going there.
Yep. Okay. And I am going to get to the category A and explain a little bit about that as well.
Thank you.
So this is just an aerial figure that shows the purple, the path, those 6 receivers that are impacted because the path gets very close to the noise source. And then the proposed project, including Confluence Parkway, is in red there. And then we're also diagramming, this is where the pinch point is. This is where you have those locations of the receptors that are very close to the roadway. Next slide. So Jacobs wanted to put together a noise contour map that's like a heat map so that we can show where the higher levels are and how that dissipates in the environment. So when you look at this first figure, you know, you see the trail there again in purple, but we're showing that next to Confluence Parkway, you're very close, you have that noise levels that are 65, sometimes get above that 70 decibel threshold right next to the curb. And then it quickly diminishes as you move away. So you can see that in this area, the campgrounds, mostly in that green range, which is less than 50 decibels and can get up to 55, start to get in that yellow when you're on the very west side of that campground. But you can see that the point of showing this is to demonstrate that noise is very loud close to the roadway, but it diminishes very quickly as you get away. And that has to do with the speed limits and the traffic composition and volumes on the proposed Confluence Parkway. Next slide, please. So then this is where you can see why you were getting the impacts on the trail. You can see that noise level is from 65 to 70 at that pinch point, maybe slightly higher as that trail is passing through there. But again, as you look at those Haran areas where people are going to be using that area, it's still relatively quiet. You're seeing 50, sometimes less than 50 decibels at those areas. And the closer you move to the road, again, potentially into the 55 to 60 range. So this is an important figure because it shows that realigning the trail at this point really relieves some of the future impacts that could have been if you kept the trail following Holly Street and then down the proposed Confluence Parkway. So with this shift in alignment, you're not going to see impacts at this location. In fact, you're seeing that, you know, 55 is roughly where they would be at decibel level. Next slide. So once you've identified impacts, the next step is to analyze for noise abatement. So when you have an impact, it's required that you look at noise abatement options, typically in the form of a wall or a berm. They must meet feasibility and reasonableness criteria that's established by FHWA, but each state, including Washington DOT, has their own criteria they use to analyze feasibility and reasonableness. And they're fairly consistent with other states, but what they look at is, can you construct it safely and meet standards? Can you get appropriate noise reduction, and is it cost effective? And so when we look at the abatement options that were analyzed in the noise study, the first one was a 4-foot berm with a 4-foot wall at the pinch point. I think we've discussed that before, and that's kind of what's proposed in the project at this point. But that is a 4-foot berm that's, you know, a vegetative berm. And at that pinch point, you have a 4-foot wall. And then that one could not meet that 7 decibel noise reduction. So the noise receptor at the pinch point that was analyzed would not get a 7 decibel reduction with the 4-foot berm and a 4-foot wall. So it didn't meet WSDOT's reasonableness criteria. Therefore, they provide a cost, but it's not applicable at that point. Then when you move on to option number 2, this was a 4-foot berm, but they put a 2-foot noise wall on top of that berm for additional reduction, and then they made the wall at the pinch point a 6-foot high wall. So that was able to achieve that 7 decibel reduction at that particular receptor, and so then it moved on to cost. And when you add all that wall, extra wall in there, you find that it does not meet their cost-effective criteria. So the cost of abatement is above their allowable cost. And the third option was a 4-foot, and excuse the mistake there, but it is a 4-foot berm with a 4-foot noise wall and then an 8-foot wall at the pinch point. So it's just, again, adding more noise reduction. But again, doing that, you're not going to meet that cost-effective criteria. Next slide. So even though option 1 didn't meet the criteria for Washington policy, and therefore they do not consider it federally, you can't federally fund that, option 1 is proposed by the city because it can also be a visual mitigation. So with the 4-foot berm, you're not going to see as much of the traffic. You may see some heavy truck exhaust pipes or something, but you're not going to see that roadway when you're on that path with a 4-foot berm. So it's a visual block. And also could be an aesthetic enhancement in that they can add vegetation to this wall. So those are justifiable ways to incorporate this berm and noise wall. And at the same time, they do offer a typical 5 decibel reduction at the receptors along the path. So I think it was in good nature for the city to keep that mitigation in there, knowing that there were other ways to justify the cost when it comes to visual and aesthetic. Something to keep in mind is that when you're at the pinch point, the city has proposed to lower the trail. So from the walls, from the roadway surface, the wall might be 4 feet high, but they've also lowered the trail 4 feet on the other side. So what you're seeing is an 8-foot separation from where you're walking on the trail to the top of the noise wall. And then if we can go back to the previous slide.
Will, did we lose you?
Says he's still on.
Will, we lost your voice.
Looks like he just, I don't know, he's still on. Now he's signed off. He's going to sign back on. Yeah.
Let's take a five-minute break.
Sure.
Because my iPad is going to go dead here in just a second, so I can get out and get my charging cord in my car, and okay. Let's come back and
okay,
we can minutes. Keep all the technology running. So let's take a five-minute break. Okay, Will, we're back. I never thought that I would say be riveted with a noise study, but right at the climax of the presentation, the computer dies. So anyway, welcome back and continue.
You asked, I think you, the last we heard, Will, you asked us to go back to the prior slide, and so that's up on the screen.
Okay. Perfect. Okay, so what I wanted to bring to everyone's attention was that potentially there's another mitigation option that can be considered. And it would be a combination of abatement option one and two, and this wasn't looked at in the noise study. So if you were to just construct a four-foot berm without a noise wall on it, but at the pinch point you use a six-foot wall, you can effectively get that 7 decibel noise reduction that you could not with option one, and then it appears to meet all that criteria, it can be cost-effective. However, in the noise study, they didn't analyze the cost of the berm because when they looked at these options, they didn't need to. So it could be that the cost of the berm still prevents this from being cost effective. But it does achieve that 7 decibel reduction. Now, mind you, the city is still proposing this 4-foot noise wall with a 4-foot wall, not a 6-foot wall. So what this would do is it would add 2 feet to this wall at the pinch point, but it would only get, you know, a 2 to 3 decibel reduction, additional reduction at just the pinch point. So I think it's something to consider. Is it worth going forward with that? I'm not sure. I think that's a decision for Chelan to make, but there is that option that could be discussed.
Great.
Does that, and I just want to make sure that makes sense to everybody, what Will is suggesting there. It took me a while to get my mind wrapped around it. So
let's review one more time. That's a good question. So yeah. Let's make sure I understand what you just said. So it is combination of one and two. It's a 4-foot berm, except with a instead of a 4-foot wall, it's a 6-foot wall at the pinch point.
Yes, right. But then you don't have that 2-foot wall on top of the berm the whole length.
Gotcha.
So that would, in essence, not putting that 2-foot wall on the berm the whole length would save the cost, reduce the cost dramatically in a way, and it would get that 7 decibel noise reduction if you just did the 6-foot wall at the pinch point. So it would be like option one, you're seeing yes, yes, no. It would be a yes, 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 and then you would look more closely at the cost effectiveness, keeping in mind that they didn't include the cost of the berm in this cost of abatement. So they'd have to look at what that really was and compare it to allowable cost. And then that particular, if it was cost effective, that would be a federal funded noise abatement option. But as I was alluding to, with the city already stating that they're going to construct a 4-foot berm with a 4-foot wall, you'd basically just be, you know, adding this 2-foot wall or 2-foot high to that 4-foot wide high wall, and then getting a 2 to 3 additional decibel reduction at the pinch point. So you're adding this cost just to get a 2 to 3 decibel reduction just at the pinch point. So that's where you have to decide, is it worth it to try to pursue that for just 2 to 3 decibels at one small location?
So,
but it is another option I wanted to bring to everyone's attention.
So before we move off this, but it in my mind, it does more than just noise abatement, because I know that's what we're talking about. That also is 2 more feet of a barrier where bicyclists and walkers, I believe, could feel additional safety by having that a little bit higher. That's been a concern of mine. So I think it's more than just in consideration. I think it's just more than sound. So.
Okay.
I like that. Thank you very much, Anne.
Yep. And just keep in mind it would be just that short segment at the pinch point.
Yes.
Where you're getting that additional 2 high barrier. Okay. Just want to make sure that's understood.
So this is Anne. I want to jump in here.
Yep.
Safety and aesthetics.
Mm-hmm.
I think the berm's very important for aesthetics. So I get all of that and the combining of one and two and so forth. What I don't get is you said that it would have to be considered cost effective for federal funding. So in order for the city to get their federal funding, it has to fall in that cost effective box?
So as far as just being a noise abatement mitigation measure, yes. But I think what's going on is that because of the visual impacts and mitigating those, and because of an aesthetic enhancement, FHWA might be, and likely they're going to include funding for this as part of the project. So the 4-foot wall and the 4-foot berm being already proposed, if that already gets federal funding, then you're just, then the cost is just the cost of that addition, is just the cost of that 2 feet added on to that 4 foot at the pinch point. And so I guess what I'm trying to compare is that there's not going to be a lot of difference if you push the city to go forward with this 2 foot option as far as funding is concerned. It would just get a little bit more reduction of that pinch point. And then except for the idea that maybe they feel like, you know, the idea that the bikers and walkers would feel safer with a 2 foot additional wall at that pinch point.
Yeah, I understand. So, yeah, I understand that. I think the importance of the aesthetics and the safety almost can't be measured in dollars. So, you know, I find it interesting. I guess what I'd like to hear from the city what their thoughts are on this.
I just try to want to reiterate that I don't know this for certain because I don't know the funding mechanism behind this,
mm-hmm.
but FHWA is probably covering their portion of their cost. You know, it's usually an 80-20 split for these types of projects, mm-hmm. 80 on the federal side, for this berm with a noise wall as a justified visual shield, visual mitigation, and aesthetic element to this project. So that's why it matters a little bit less of whether this turns out to be fundable from a noise abatement perspective. So if it meets all these criteria and the federal government can fund it as a noise abatement measure, well, it seems that they're already funding this as a visual impact mitigation and aesthetic treatment for this area.
Yeah. That
does that make sense?
It does. That'll be important to know for sure, that point.
Yeah, so it's something that you want to pursue further, too. Well, are the feds funding this berm and noise wall combination? Because then if not, then you could say just add 6 foot to the pinch point on option one, and you meet all their criteria, except they have to look more closely into the cost at that point.
Dennis, did you have a question?
Go ahead. Yeah, Will, if I may, please.
Yep.
The 6 foot wall, if I heard you right and I'm remembering correctly, is a 3 decibel reduction.
The 6 foot wall would provide a 7 decibel reduction. At the pinch point, if you had the 6 foot wall. Before, the 4 foot wall was getting a 5 decibel reduction at the pinch point.
Okay, so really the differential is 2 decibels.
Yes.
Okay, and if I remember in your introduction, it's at 3 decibels is where you perceivably notice a difference.
It's called barely perceptible, and I think that's why that a 5 decibel is what they call readily perceptible, and that's why so many state policies require that noise walls achieve a 5 decibel reduction at so many receptors or so many percentage of impacted receptors on their projects.
So we're really looking at an additional expense for a total of a 1 decibel differential.
Potentially 2 or 3.
Potentially 2.
Yeah. Yep.
But basically not perceptible. Does that make sense what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, it does. So this 2 foot addition would go from a 5 decibel reduction at the pinch point to a 7 decibel reduction. If it's, you know, a flat profiled wall, you know, potentially, yeah. You know, if you add another 2 feet to it, you're going to get, you know, a 4 to 5 decibel reduction. So an 8 foot wall there,
yeah.
But you know, that becomes, you gotta be a little careful there too on how high that wall gets. And again, yeah, all that additional cost for those reductions just to this little section there.
And what is the just estimated length of the pinch point?
I might have to ask someone to help me with this, but I thought it was somewhere around 400 feet.
Okay.
Yeah, it might even be a little bit shorter than that, but that's pretty cool.
A little bit shorter? Okay.
Okay. Now, if we agreed and left it at a 4 and a 4, and I'm thinking if I'm a deer out in the meadow, perceptively, what is that differential and how is that going to affect the wildlife that is there? Because we're putting a lot of human response into this, and our job is to not only be considerate of the humans, but the animal life as well. So,
I think that's what I'm asking. Yes, it does. I think that's a great question. It kind of leads me into some of the work I did when I was out there taking readings. As you get further away from noise abatement, the noise more readily passes over that wall, and the further away you get, the less noticeable any reduction is. In fact, at this point, when you're 300, 400 feet away, you're not getting a perceptible difference as the noise just passes over. So it's like if you've ever been out, you know, in the Haran area, you can still hear some of the hum from, you know, industrial construction noise or 285 and Wenatchee, all the traffic, even though there's all the shielding in the way, because the further away you get, the more it diffracts over. Now, it's at a lower, much lower decibel level. But so the mitigation here, based on what I'm understanding of your question, is not going to really mitigate any noise for further in the Haran or, you know, for instance, the campgrounds or anything like that. And then as it comes to wildlife, I think you have to keep in mind that the wildlife are used to the human. It seems to me that they're used to the human presence there already because you have that significant train noise source. That wasn't quiet when I was out there. I heard when I was out there, there were several last Monday afternoon, there were, within a 2-hour period of time, there were 3 boats that went by on the water that were extremely noisy. I was all the way up at the path, and they were affecting my noise measurements on the path that far away from the Haran area. So as a question to ask whether how it affects wildlife, I don't know the answer for certain and don't want to make any assumptions, but this, you know, this is an urban environment where you have existing noise sources out there for sure. And human-made noise sources, for that matter.
Yeah. So really, the mitigation that we're talking about at the pinch point is more of mitigating for human consideration, not so much for animals, because that exists already. I'm just trying to...
I'm just
thinking it loud.
And keep in mind that the 4-foot berm, or if we take our focus off the pinch point for a little bit, the 4-foot berm does provide some reductions of 4 to 5 decibels at other locations along the trail where there are impacted receptors.
Okay. Thank you.
We have another question, Will.
Sure.
Yeah, this is Ann again. So I can't help, again, say that you have train noise, you have some boat noise, you add some car noise and some truck noise, and maybe not technically speaking by the numbers, it's cumulative. So you are adding additional noise. So that's my only point, affecting both people walking on the trail and wildlife. And then also I think it would be good to bring Von Pope in again. And certainly Vaughn can share with us he's our wildlife expert, and he can tell us what he thinks the effects will be. We have deer up by our cabin that are so domesticated that nothing seems to bother them. But there are peregrine falcons, and there's other wildlife that they are very sensitive to noise. So I'd love to hear from Vaughn Pope. And then also, I have a question on the heat map. Let's see, Will, the second heat map? And I don't know, maybe you can't answer this either. I can't, because I think Steve asked you about the length of the pinch point. But, I'm seeing the trail move into that red area where it's greater than 70 decibels at the pinch point, and it stays right in that red area for trail walkers all the way to, looks like it might go almost to the river. So would that be that's not a quarter of a mile, is it? Probably less. That's a fair distance, though.
So, I mean, you're correct in that trail parallels that road for that particular distance, and you're going to see higher noise levels right along there. I think greater than 70, it's difficult because of the resolution we have and how zoomed out we are. The greater than 70 is very, very close to the roadway, right next to it. The highest noise level that the model predicted at that pinch point was 70 decibels, and everything was lower than that. So I feel like maybe the map's not doing it justice and that there's a blend of this orange and red kind of where this trail is, with the exception of the pinch point where it's right at 70 decibels on one of those receptors.
Okay.
But of course that trail parallels that roadway for that distance from the pinch point to past the pedestrian bridge.
Yes. Yeah. So can you give us a sense of what 55 or me, I of what 55 decibels is?
Yeah, that's very difficult for me to try to describe what that sounds like. But for instance, when I was out there, if you take a walk through the Horan area, you get back away from the road, you're right between 45 and 50 decibels, which is kind of shown by this. And then when you get a little bit closer, you take that path up, you start to get to that 60 zone. I think what 50 decibels sound like is being in, I think wind, if you have a breezy day, wind rustles, not too breezy, but that you just get that background noise of the wind. And then if you're talking to maybe three or four people and you're having a reasonable conversation, that's what 50 decibels sounds like. I think the best thing that you could look at, so the tech memo showed a chart that shows what common outdoor and indoor noises sound like at what decibel level. I think that would be really important to look at if you want to get a feel for it. It's hard for me to describe because I can really say that, well, a noisy urban environment can be at 60 to 70 decibels, sometimes higher depending on all your noise sources, while a very quiet rural environment can be, 40 to 50 decibels. And then the noises you're hearing are, wind and nature.
Oh, great. Yeah, thank you. And Justin just handed me this indoor-outdoor sound level, so I missed that somehow, but that's great. Thank you. That's helpful.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, I think that's going to be the best reference to try to understand how that feels. And it's even really hard to describe because, like I said, it's subjective. Everyone's a little bit different.
Right.
So, Will, I'd like to ask you another question. This is Steve.
Absolutely.
So, by looking at the proposed map, when we move the trail down below Holly Street, we see some actual improvement in the quality of the biking, walking experience in that area. It's going to be lower than what it is now.
If we can go to the next slide just so we can get a good visual of it. Yeah, so keeping the trail where it was would have had noise levels between, like common with the rest of the trail, 65 to 70 right along Holly and to Confluence Parkway.
Right.
Shifting this there, you can see that it's going to be lower. It's going to be 50 to 60 decibels depending on where that curves in and out of. And that's a good improvement.
Mm-hmm.
But, you still have that section of the trail that parallels the roadway
right.
for a good distance that's impacted. So that's there. We want to make sure that's understood. That's an impacted part of the trail.
Right.
How people respond to that it's tough to tell. Some people are going to be on their bikes with the air going in around their helmets, and they're not going to notice the noise source.
Right.
Some are going to have their earbuds in, taking a run. They're going to listen to music. Others are going to be, you know, walking right next to each other, having a conversation. When they get to that point, there might be some interruption in that.
So when, so now I'm going to go clear to the other end of the trail where the noise impacts the park. So again, and I think this is, Dennis is correct, we're talking about the difference between animals and human beings. The noise that we're going to see at the other end where our park is at is going to be kind of at that upper level that you would get when the train goes through, except it's going to be all the time. It's going to be when the cars are there. It's really not going to be any louder than when the train goes through, but I'm thinking about this as it's even though the trail is going to be farther away, the inhabitants of the park are going to hear a more consistent noise level at that higher level. Is that correct?
I don't quite understand the question you're asking.
So if I'm camping in the park, noise level is going to be high when the train goes through.
Yeah.
When if and when the road is built through there, that noise level is going to be approximately as high as a train, but it's going to be consistent all the time.
So the train, when that train goes by, I was not at the pinch point. I was behind the path at like a kind of a nature, burnout of the trail. And when the train engine passed by, it spiked at 82. And then when the train went by and that held steady at that point, at 70 to 75 decibels. If I would have been right on the pinch point, that would have been very unbearable, that train noise.
Uh-huh.
And so there is a difference, but I want to point out that train goes by for 10 minutes in that hour.
Right.
That traffic noise right at that particular point, if we just use the pinch point as an example, would be between 67 and 70 decibels.
Okay.
And that's the hourly average. Now, an hourly average means that there's going to be times where a heavy truck goes by, spikes a little higher. There's going to be time where there's no heavy trucks and there's a little bit less traffic, it goes lower. But that hourly average is 67 to 70 right at that pinch point constant.
Okay.
Now, with what I understand what you're asking with the campgrounds, the further away you move from that constant noise source, the less of a dramatic increase there's going to be. In the noise study, the closest campgrounds were predicting to achieve a 5 to 7 decibel increase in noise from what their existing would be at the peak hour. As you move further away in those campgrounds, it lessens to 3 to 4 to 2.
Okay.
As an increase. So it's kind of, it's proportional to distance in a way that your increase in noise is going to be less noticeable the further you are away from that noise source.
Got it. Thank you.
Again, 67 to 70 decibels, and even 65, and for some people, the 60 to 65 range along that trail, that's a noticeable change. Mm-hmm. Some people are going to be more annoyed with that than others.
So a piece of information that I read this weekend on adaptive behavior, coyotes in urban Los Angeles now read the walk, don't walk traffic signals at intersections and cross at the green and not in between. So, interesting.
Okay, so as we transition into the Category A designation, so as just a quick background, there are several noise abatement criteria. They're called NAC, noise abatement criteria activity categories that you look at when you're completing a noise study. So, for instance, the Apple Capitol Trail is a Category C, which is parks and trails, churches, land use of that sort. And then For example, a residential or activity category B, and their impact threshold changes. So we know the Apple Capitol Trail and the Confluence State Park being activity category C is 66 decibels for an impact. However, category A is this definition where it's land where serenity and quiet are of extraordinary significance and serve an important public need. So they lower that impact threshold to 55 decibels. So mind you, this category A, this proposed category A designation has not been approved yet, doesn't change the noise study in that the decibel levels at Horan, Michael Minor Associates analyzed, were less than this 55 decibel threshold. But the importance of continuing to push for the category A designation is because it sets a precedence. In the future on Confluence Parkway, if they need to add a lane because this facility becomes at capacity and they need, you know, relief of that congestion, for example, that triggers a noise study. Now, if this is designated as A now, it'll be, you can look back, you can point to that and say, this is a designation, it will continue to be that way. If they categorize it as a C, FHWA decides, no, this is a C now, then you're going to have a much tougher time getting that as an A in the future. I think the importance of that is that that lowers that impact threshold, and it's more likely that abatement will be analyzed for this area. It doesn't necessarily mean that abatement will more likely be feasible and reasonable and meet all those criteria, but that impact being lower means there's a greater chance that it's impacted and they'll have to look at abatements. And so categorizing it A now holds that importance. Now, I want also to keep in mind that these category A designations are very rare. It's not something that's easily justifiable, but we feel that it's important to push forward with this to demonstrate that these resources should be protected in this way. The Horan area should be a category A. So Jacobs is going to work with Chelan to help with that justification to Fed Highway. And again, it'll be a challenge, but we think it's the right thing.
Great.
I like that.
So who is proposing A?
So the city and their noise consultant proposed this as a category A.
Okay.
I think Chelan, as far as I know, would agree with trying to push for that designation. And there's kind of a checklist that needs to be filled out and potentially just, some narrative of explaining why everyone believes that this should be designated as a category A, with the caveat that it's a rare designation by FHWA.
Anne?
Yeah, well, you know what? I'd like to ask Michelle to speak to that, because Michelle understands the whole federal process and FERC and the fact that this is mitigation, Horan Natural Area's mitigation as part of our Rock Island license. Mm-hmm. And as such, we are required to maintain it as a natural area. So will you speak to what that means, mm-hmm. Michelle?
Yes. So natural area in our FERC license doesn't necessarily have a really nice, neat definition behind it. So it makes it a little bit, subjective, I guess, to try and define what natural area means. But I think what we want to do is make sure that as we've been calling it a natural area and something that we're trying to protect, it's the integrity of the quiet, the serene, the wildlife that's in there, the natural education components that are in there. So we were happy that the city and their consultant proposed it as a category A. It's in the noise discipline report that Michael Minor put together as a category proposed. But we've learned that that needs to be accepted, if you will, by Federal Highway, who makes the final decision. So the city came to us and said, would you want to take the first, pencil to paper and help us justify why you believe under your federal license that it needs to be protected as category A? And we said, absolutely, we'll help with that. So as Will mentioned, we want to do that, give them something that builds in our federal license, builds in the protection of the natural area. But again, we have to be realistic in the fact that this is very rare. There's
hardly any of these in the entire United States. So Arlington Cemetery is the one, if you try and Google it, it's the only one you can actually Google and find, because we've tried. And so we realize it's rare, but we feel it's worth fighting for. And we really believe if the city and the noise expert, Michael Miner, that did the original study, they believed it was a Category A when they did the study the first time. So we think that we can continue to push for that, and we're hoping that Federal Highway will agree. So, yeah, I wish I could say that FERC, you know, that our FERC license, you know, makes it a Category A. But I do think that there's elements under our license and under the purpose of trying to protect that as a natural area that we can build on the, you know, build on those elements and write a pretty good justification for it.
Great. Wonderful.
Thanks, Michelle.
Okay, so we just want to provide a summary of the next steps to help out with this process. And so you're allowed to provide formal comments after your environmental assessment is published, and that's anticipated for the fall of 2022. So any concerns that you have, you can submit as public comment at that point. We are going to, again, we just discussed this, prepare noise abatement category A proposal for review by FHWA, and hopefully we can make some movement on that and get that Category A designation. And then a couple of items that should be coordinated with the cities. So preparing mitigation drawings and technical specifications early in the planning process for the design, build, procurement package. I think that's important because design build projects are a little bit different, and they don't have as much detail going into, you know, given to the contractor at the time. But I think it's important to make sure that the specifications of this berm and wall are included and are committed to be built with this project. And then I think the second element, and we didn't discuss this much in this presentation, it is discussed in the tech memo a little more, but when you're looking at bridge noise, there's a shortcoming in the traffic noise model that doesn't take certain elements of bridge noise into consideration that can add to the impact. So, for example, if you don't have continuous expansion joints of the bridge, so they're open expansion joints, modular, they tend to be bumpy when you cross them, and that creates an impulse of noise. And that impulse of noise is not taken into consideration in the noise model. So that could be something that is more annoying as that pedestrian bridge pedestrian bridge crosses under the roadway bridge. There's also just that airborne noise underneath, the reflection of the noise and the noise from the bottom of the bridge deck that has a direct line to the pedestrian bridge. In addition, you know, they designed some bridges to be a graded surface rather than a paved surface. That increases noise, so you would want a paved surface. And then on top of that, concrete tends to be a little bit louder than asphalt. You've noticed that as you're driving along the interstate or a roadway and you transfer from concrete to asphalt, you could potentially work with the city to see if that's an option. Now, there's sometimes they can't do certain things with the bridge because of the design, safety, engineering. excuse me. But I think that working with the city to find ways to reduce the noise at the bridge could be important for that pedestrian path as well. So continuous expansion joints, paved deck, and working with the designers to see what they know about minimizing noise effects from a bridge. And the technical memorandum does have some links to studies that were done on bridge noise, and one specific WASHDOT study on expansion joint noise and potential mitigation. So there's resources out there as well. And that's the end of the presentation. So any additional questions or any areas we want to revisit?
That's commissioners. And we didn't talk about the last item, but I appreciate your comments, because that would be something just like our pinch point. I would, you know, and we saw those alluvial fans that the city proposed to begin. I'd like to keep emphasizing for us to, you know, the pinch point, the underpass, you know, the working to mitigate those is important to us, so, or to me anyway. So I really appreciate this report and presentation today. I've learned a lot.
Yeah, that's great. That was our hope, that we could educate and bring some of that technical level information down so that it was understood and understand what's going on out there. You know, I think that was important for us to try to communicate. So I hope that was done well.
Commissioners, anything else?
No, it's good.
Maybe
thank
I can.
Thank you, Steve, for that. Old dogs, new tricks. Thank you.
Thank you, Will.
Maybe I can just.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Will.
Good to meet everybody.
Maybe I can just add a little bit here in terms of what now, at least what we're thinking. So we've done quite a bit of legwork and had Will help us out on the noise learning and education piece in a big way. There are a number of moving parts to this potential project, and I certainly want to take the opportunity to thank the city for the cooperation all along the way, but also add that you know, we really are getting to the point where we need to determine what we're going to do with all of this. And so our thinking at this point is we have a memo of understanding with the city currently that we're operating under, but then it'll be a matter of if we decide to move forward with a land exchange agreement, there's not only the noise component, there's also the utility relocation components, the transmission lines, the distribution lines. There's the state park employee housing at the confluence state park. So there's a number of pieces here. And so our thinking is that we need to pull all those pieces together and have a clear understanding of what they all are, and then drive it to a decision.
I think part of that understanding that we've also talked about is that North End egress to the near the park there, so that we see the impact of that. We need to see that in the design
at the entrance.
As well.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you very much.
I have a question for Kirk, or maybe Michelle. So when do we, commissioners, make a decision on the 4F concurrence?
I think we have until the fall to do that. I think really what we've been striving for is trying to pull all the pieces together so one decision is made with a clear understanding of what's all behind that decision.
Good.
So,
because I want to make sure that that a whole bunch of legwork and money spent and time spent doesn't all happen before we take our first step, which is that 4F concurrence. And that even that doesn't guarantee, that doesn't say we're going to go ahead and do the land swap. Correct?
All correct.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. And I think it's really want to look to the board in terms of comfort level. We think we've done the legwork, and now it's all pulling it all together at this point, and could be late summer.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Michelle.
I know I don't see members of the public, but I do want to open it up for anybody online or here anybody else have anything to say, add to this? Okay. All right. So we have finished item number 5 on our agenda. And we've done the consent and our resolutions. Where are we at with manager items?
We're done with manager items.
We're all done with that.
Yep.
Lisa's now here to talk about commission travel.
Wrapped in a blanket.
It's so cold in here.
I know.
I survive out there a little bit because I'm under that skylight when the sun comes out.
Cool. Oh, that's not true. She survives out there because she's closer to the hot air coming out of my office.
Well, I didn't want to throw you under the...
That's okay.
So we are hitting summer where our travel slows down quite a bit. So we have WAPUTA. Our July WAPUTA meetings will be here in Wenatchee. And I have everyone registered, all set to go. I have Commissioner Smith traveling to Washington, D.C. Later in July. Commissioner McKenna is not attending Energy Northwest. Is that correct?
Correct.
And then we're out into September WAPUTA meetings. I believe they'll be back in Olympia then. And I had a question for Commissioner Arsenault. I'll follow up with him. Outside of this meeting, we have the WAPUTA Water Workshop in Spokane coming up. Commissioners Congdon and Arsenault will be attending that. And that takes us all the way up to October.
So I think
there's not a lot going on unless there's something I missed or anybody's looking forward to.
Dennis, anything on your end for Lisa?
No, thank you. Yep.
Great. Okay. So I think we're good, Lisa.
All right. Thanks.
And you're going to follow up with Gary.
I am.
Okay. Yep. All right. Do we have any commission items to bring forward?
Don't have any.
I'm not seeing anything from Dennis, so I think we're done there. Follow up on delegation items from the previous board meeting.
We have no new updates there.
And I think we got the one item on delegation of items from today taken care of. I can't remember what that was, but I heard an answer on it.
Well, there was the one Commissioner Congdon asked about the developer up in Chelan.
Oh, yeah.
It was addressed right there.
We got that answered.
Yeah.
Okay. So do we have anything else?
The only other thing the request for Vaughn Pope, and what I was thinking is we would include that in all the materials that we pull together, unless you'd like something else done.
No, that'd be great.
Okay. So no.
Do we have any additional public comment at this time? Do we have any matters of general business as may be necessarily come before the commissioners today? Anything else? Okay, we will be moving into executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or likely to become a party, and or legal risk as authorized by RCW 42.30.110. And to consider information regarding the infrastructure and security of computer telecommunication networks, security and service recovery plans, security risk assessments, and security test results to the extent that they identify specific system vulnerabilities pursuant to RCW 42.30.110. Is there any other additional business to come before the commission?
Just going to estimate for 30 minutes. For the executive session.
Right. Oh, yeah. I jumped ahead there. So we're going 30 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll be in recess for 30 minutes. That's the end. We are coming out of executive session. No decisions were made. Votes taken. Is there any additional business to come before the commission today? Hearing none, we stand adjourned.